bad movies.
Why do killers feel the need to put heads in dryers? Why does that happen?
Yeah.
It's just random insertions of stupid shit.
All the guys in this movie wanted random insertion.
What you actually see on screen is so blazingly stupid and offensive.
Comedy.
Every time Busta Rhymes opens his mouth,
welcome to stage 10, the number one example of something. If you can't tell, my sinuses don't work at all.
I am convinced that he is a mutated piranha man.
What the fuck is happening?
And the older cop's like, everyone around here is fucking crazy, and that's where they end.
I want alcohol.
I want booze and corn.
And sure enough, here comes Uncle Sex.
Here comes Uncle Sex.
Here comes Uncle Sex.
Profanity.
That fucking prick fuck dickhole cocksucker is not my father, okay? He's my stepfather. And then her face just drops in the pile and goes, my daddy's in heaven. What the fuck?
Way to turn.
This! Way to turn on a fucking dime.
Fuck-fuckity-fuck-fuck-ass balls cock fuck. I'm sweet.
She's bipolar.
Wash his back while he takes a bath. He's like, you won't see anything. I'll be under the suds. And she's like, okay, well, make sure those suds stay in place.
I don't control the water, bitch.
Goes over and goes, alright, you guys better leave her alone, or else this.
Why is he talking like a Rob Zombie character?
But that's how he does talk.
Because he goes, go fuck the trolls,
go put my snork all over them flappy ass trolls.
Shitty Movie Night Podcast, www.smnpodcast.com. Also on iTunes and Zune.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long-awaited episode 20 of the Zombie Girls podcast. I can't believe we're finally getting our shit together. So, first of all, let me introduce my lovely co-host for the night. Next to me is the wonderful, fabulous Lady Succubus, a.k.a. Summer. And joining us for the very first time ever, is... What do you want us to call you? Sarah or Coffee Bugs?
Sarah's fine.
Okay. Is Sarah the latest addition to the Zombie Girls podcast? So join me in welcoming Sarah to the ridiculousness that is the Zombie Girls podcast.
Welcome, Sarah.
So, okay, let's give a little background. The deal is, should we just start off with some housekeeping?
Sure. It's been
all right.
A while, yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. So basically, we put out the podcast and like we suck at getting them out in a timely fashion.
We do.
And so I'm always getting, not always, but I kind of frequently get emails like, when's the next show? We want to hear more, which let me just tell you, like, does not hurt my ego. I'm not mad at those emails, but I feel bad because the truth is we just have all of these scheduling problems. Like we are all really busy. And so finding time to like everybody, get everybody together and it turns into this big, like, production, so then next thing you know, 4 months have gone by, and we haven't put in an episode, and so, and then Brienne had the baby, so that made it even more complicated. What are you doing?
Even blank. So yeah, we got babies, work, boyfriends, girlfriends, it's
a mess,
it's
right.
A mess.
So, anyways, we decided probably the best way to do it, because we didn't want to stop putting out shows, was
Never.
To kind of, like, take Zombie Girls to the next level. This is Zombie Girls 2.0. So we're going to and add some more amazing, brilliant, horror-loving women to the show. So I put out the call, and I'm so excited. We got some fucking awesome girls joining. Like, I keep joking.
That's awesome that people want to be
that
on
I
the
am,
show.
Like, we have formed the Extraordinary League of Whore Bitches. Like, we are... I mean, there's, like... I mean, I don't know. There's just, like, a lot of different... They're all bringing something really awesome to the show. We've got people who are really established in, like, the horror podcast community. We've got people who have degrees in women's studies. We have, like, Lisa with her formidable boobs. I mean, like, it's going to be amazing. So, anyways...
We have a well-rounded cast.
We do have a well-rounded cast.
From every walk of life, I think.
Yeah, and once we roll out, like... At some point, we'll have to get everybody together, and it's just going to be, like, zombie girl bedlam. It's going to be nutty.
And I'll be wasted.
Well, I think we'll all be wasted. That's sort of, like,
a
given.
That always gets wasted.
That's you.
First.
I know. Naked, wasted Summer over here. I can't take her anywhere.
Hey, I'm 2 beers down already, so.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No wonder you're fitting in so well already.
you're going on about all these, you know, wonderful and
Uh-oh.
We lost you.
Unemployed and drunk.
Well, I heard it was unemployed and drunk.
I think we get the point. How do you think we started this podcast? I think we were all unemployed and drunk. So it's for, you're a perfect fit. But no, I would definitely put you under the category of just being like a super horror fan. And that in and of itself is a valuable commodity on the show.
Kind of okay. How our relationship started.
I know. It is. That's how it happened. Like, Summer and I were neighbors, and we started watching horror movies together, and it was a wrap. It was love at first, grudge high. Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so anyways, Sarah is going to be, is our latest addition, and she, we met her because she would write into the show. She would write in these hilarious emails, and we kind of built a correspondence and a friendship that way, so it was like a natural fit. And when I put out the call, like at the top of the list, I was like, I hope I hear from Sarah, because she's been with us on this journey for so long, she'll just fit right in. And you know what? The first person I heard from? Sarah! So, okay, I wanted to get to know you a little bit. You said how we met you, so tell me a little bit about you. So you're unemployed and drunk. What else?
Recently I was laid off from my company that I had been at for the past 2 years.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. So currently I'm unemployed. I'm also mostly full-time student. I'm actually carrying about 9 units, and next semester I'll be carrying a lot more. I'm working towards a teaching credential in English literature.
Cool.
And my hope is to teach high school.
Wow, you got balls.
Yeah.
Well, I'd probably murder
you. You're not the first person to tell me that.
Yeah, I know. I'm like already planning. Like, okay, you're gonna have to be my alibi, because I'm gonna have to kill some motherfuckers in the first semester. Well, that's cool. So tell me a little bit about, okay, like, we always talk about being big wimps. Like, we can't really watch anything tortury. What kind of horror fan are you? Are you into the whole graphic torture? Are you going to bring that to the cast?
You know, one of my first memories of horror films was Friday the 13th Part 2.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was probably about 4 or 5 when we saw that, and
perfectly age appropriate, perfectly healthy.
We lived in a cabin in the middle of the woods.
Oh shit!
Scary.
my dad was a state park ranger, so you know we lived inside the state park boundaries for a couple years.
Wow. So did you sit there and marathon Friday the 13th, The Village, and Blair Witch Project?
No. this was long, long before. I'm old enough to remember when John Lennon got shot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know when that was. In the olden days, that's all I know. That's awesome.
I remember when George Michael was straight.
You know, I think I remember that too, because my sister gave me a George Michael t-shirt for Christmas 1 year.
And did you think he was hot?
I did, and I would, like, play his, I had, like, a Walkman, and I would play his tape, and I was always afraid my mom was gonna hear me playing I Want Your Sex and take it away from me.
Okay, I'm not seeing.
That's good, though. You're bringing the median age down. I think I was the oldest one on the cast before, so. So that's good. Okay, so, all right, should we talk about what we've been watching?
Yeah, because I got something to tell you.
Uh-oh. All right, but go ahead. Summer, you start.
I mean, I've been watching tons of DVDs, but the first one I have to say, and I'm going to watch it with you.
What?
Because I told you I would watch it with you.
What?
I watched The Human Centipede.
You did not watch that without me.
Go ahead and hit me. I wish I could take it back.
Well, really? Is that one of those things you wish you could unsee?
Yes.
Maybe it was a mistake on my part. I'd seen a bunch of little clips of it, you know, here and there on the internet. So by the time I actually saw the whole movie, I was kind of bored with it.
The only reason I watched this is because I told you my cable's out. So it was like Redbox. You have it at Redbox.
I just can't even believe you went there.
Let me tell you what it says. It says 100% medically
accurate.
Yeah. And I'm just like, no way. No way.
So you're saying your next pet is not going to be three dog?
No. No ass to mouth action going on.
You're such a square bear. I know. I'm talking so much shit. I haven't even seen
it. You are so going to watch it.
I am. Well, you and me and Ariel, we made like the human centipede pack, which if you think about it, is probably not a good pack for three women to make.
I'm not going to get into it. I've
seen that movie.
I don't want to say anything about it because I want you to watch it.
Oh, I'm going to watch it.
And then, so let's see, I've rewatched Paranormal 2.
Okay.
And I liked it a lot better the second time.
That's good.
I thought it was a lot more, I guess, scarier.
I liked
and
it.
And when I thought about it, I really liked how it tied into the first one. I don't know why. Maybe that month when I was watching movies, just nothing. Remember? I was like,
you were like a movie. You were sipping on the hatery that whole month. Really everything was. We watched, you were like, it sucks. No, it sucks.
It's like I had to stick up my ass. But now gone. And then I rewatched The Last Exorcism.
Okay.
And I liked it a lot better. I wasn't in love with it, but.
But you'd see what me and Ariel were talking about a little more. Ariel.
Brianne came with us.
Brianne came with us? No, it was Ariel.
It was Brianne.
$1 million it was Ariel. All right. Here we go.
We shook on it.
We shook on it. I am a millionaire, people. I remember because.
This is what I own.
Oh, yes. I just got a pack of Reds. How many did I get? Oh, not even a full pack.
Nobody got a lighter in
there. I got 10 cigarettes and a lighter. All right. Too bad this isn't like 1905 when that would actually be worth something.
Oh, my God. I've watched so many movies that I can't even think. I watched Predators again.
Uh-huh.
I think I watched that about 3 times.
Yeah.
Still love it.
Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah.
People hate on that movie, and I don't get it. I don't
get it either.
What about you? Did you like that movie, Sarah?
You know, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you gotta see it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of movies that I don't tend to go to movies in the theater because I just really can't stand other people's children.
Yeah.
And you know, so like when I do go to a movie, it's like the matinee at the $3 theater, nobody but me in the theater. Otherwise, I just kind of wait till it comes out on Netflix or Redbox or something, and I've had so many other movies that I wanted to see first instead that hasn't been high on my list.
The big one for me was Human Centipede.
I know, I can't believe you watched that. You're a champ. But I am also sad because we were supposed to be horrified together. We were supposed to share that trauma.
I'm still going to be traumatized with you. Oh, and I watched Saw 7. I went from watching the first one to the last one, nothing in between.
All right.
Yeah.
And you, did you like it?
It was watchable. Probably because I didn't see the ones in between. So I was like, oh, that's a pretty good storyline how they turned it with the first one. Yeah, you don't.
I haven't seen any of them. So I'm just like, yeah, sure, what you said. So. Okay, so how about you, Sarah? What horror movies have you been watching lately?
Let's see. I made a list.
Atta girl.
Double. I was actually watching that on Easter.
Ooh.
What'd you think? Time.
You know what? I actually really enjoyed it. It had good pacing. I had kind of figured who the devil was going to be.
Yeah, totally. I called it from like from the first commercial I saw.
No, it actually had a nice even ending to it, which
I was actually quite surprised at how much I enjoyed it. It kept my attention.
Okay, so tell me about what was it? Something
Creature from the Pink Lagoon.
Yes. I must hear about this.
Okay. Apparently the movie is done by some theater company in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
But imagine A Night of the Living Dead and Boys in the Band as one movie.
Boys in the Band. I don't know that movie.
Oh, wow. That's a really famous gay movie from like the 60s or 70s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it the one that's in Bristol?
Is
it like that weird psychedelic one?
You know, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Man, I'm getting demoted for not knowing this. Don't let my work know. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, this group of friends all go out to gay males. They all go out to the cabin by the lake to celebrate one guy's birthday and get invaded by gay zombies.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, it just tells you a little bit about me that when I heard In the Pink, I didn't hear gay men. I heard vagina.
Yeah, I didn't hear gay men. Not at all.
I immediately thought, I was like, oh, it was sure it had to do with vagina. So was it any good? Do you recommend it, or is it?
You know what? It's a lot of fun. It's very high camp.
Right.
So it's a good movie. It really is. It's a cute, fun watch. You know, sit down with a couple of drinks and a couple of friends and have fun. Yep.
That's awesome. So, did you watch anything else?
Yes. Piranha 3D.
Nice.
Loved it.
Yeah.
That movie was awesome.
So I wanted to do a show about, I want to do a show on that one eventually, but, and I have like this weird theory about it, and I don't know, let me bounce this off you. Is that in a way, even though it's like total like boobs and blood kind of movie, there's something very like wholesome about it. You know what I mean? Like shit is so sick in horror movies these days, like, you know, Human Centipede and like the torture-y kind of stuff. And there's always like this weird psychosexual grittiness to horror movies, so that when I watched that and it was like this total like gory throwback, I was like,
yeah,
American Pie and baseball wrapped in a piranha movie. I don't know.
No, you're right.
I totally agree with you on that. I think that was definitely part of its charm, is, you know, it is definitely a throwback to films of the early 80s and that were gory but had a lot of TNA, and it was just fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and the gore was awesome. Those special effects were great.
Yeah,
I loved, what was the guy's name?
They took my penis. Yes. They took my penis.
That was so good.
I love that
one. Twice.
Yeah, I have it on Blu-ray. I'm like ready to slap that on right now. Yeah, I don't know. They're all the stuff starting to come out. Like they're casting for Piranha 3 Double D.
Ooh,
mm-hmm.
I'll be in it.
I'm fucking. Oh, listen to you. I'll be in it. Yeah, are you gonna do the underwater lesbian scene this time?
I can't remember if it's Tara Reid or Lindsay Lohan that's supposed to be in it.
Oh, please God, let it be Tara Reid. I want to see what that hot mess is up to. Lindsay's gonna be, because if it's Lindsay Lohan, she won't actually be in it. She's gonna be in jail. So.
Is she really going to jail?
I think so. This time it's like she's going. She's like, she has to do what is it? What is it when you
300
do...
hours of community service in the downtown LA battered women shelter or something?
Oh, no, she has to sweep the floor, mop the floors in the morgue.
Oh, they changed it then.
Yeah, they're like, she will definitely be seeing dead bodies.
Hmm.
I hope. Who picked that out?
I don't know. Maybe. You know what's cool? It's like one of the new zombie girls, her husband is a mortician. So.
Oh, yeah.
She's always, it's funny because he gets all these magazines, and so she always sends me the like funny and disturbing ads. And trust me, they're fucked up. There are some fucked up ads.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Anyway, okay, so have you seen anything else?
Frozen.
Oh, you know, I have not seen that. That's one of those ones that I feel like I have to be in the right place, because it's going to be like an emotional kind of, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're not going to walk away from that feeling good afterwards.
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, but, you know, I have this to say. If you decide to jump from a ski lift feet first into freshly fallen snow, it's your own damn fault the wolves eat you. Tuck and roll, buddy. Tuck and roll.
Right on. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what I would do. Okay, so basically the scenario is this summer. These people, like, trick this guy into letting him take one more run on a ski lift. And it's, like, a guy, his girlfriend, and his friend who doesn't really like his girlfriend. And there's, like, a confusion that happens. And they end up turning the ski lift off when they're, like, halfway up the mountain. And it's freezing. And it's Friday night. And nobody's coming back till Monday.
So they decide to jump?
Well, what are you going to do? They're going to freeze to death. But snow looks fluffy.
I wouldn't be the one to
jump off. Oh, hell no! I'm just telling you what the movie's about. Okay. All right. So what else have you seen?
You're going to laugh at me for this. Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
Oh, shit. So that's the Debbie Gibson Tiffany one, right?
No. That's Mega Python versus...
Oh, silly me.
Confused, Rachel. I know.
So how is Crocosaurus?
Okay, when the starring member of your cast is Urkel.
Don't you mean Jaleel White? Get it right.
Yeah, and the other big name in your movie is the guy who played the doctor on Voyager. Star Trek Voyager.
I don't know who that is. Geek alert! We have somebody that's a bigger geek than me! High five! I am usually the biggest geek in the room! Here's the thing, though. I'm gonna ruin it. Because is it the same guy who also played Johnny Cab in Total Recall? Is it that guy?
You know, I can't think of who that is. I don't know if you remember The Wonder Years. He played the coach.
No. The Wonder Years is on Netflix streaming. I was like kind of eyeballing it the other day.
I love The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
We should veg out one day.
Yeah. Right after I get you to watch Lord of the Rings, I'll reward you with The Wonder Years. Oh my god. So no good, huh?
Lord of the Rings.
What's that?
I said, which version of Lord of the Rings?
She's never seen any of them. She tried to watch one of them once and thought it was boring.
Well, I'm talking like the 50 disc set or.
The one that Peter Jackson wants us to see. All right, I know. I'm a nerd. Okay. I ruined it.
We'll make a deal.
All right.
We watch all Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And all the Saw movies.
Oh, now.
Yeah. No, you know what? I'm going to give myself.
Everybody
that.
Loses.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to give you is a gift. What you're trying to give me is a heart attack.
Actually, if you want to see something on Netflix streaming that is worse than Saw, and in my opinion, probably a little bit worse just in its graphic nature than a Serbian film.
What?
Aftermath.
Aftermath. Is that the I think I've seen
the
that.
Nacho Cedro film.
Oh, isn't that like a necrophilia thing?
Yes.
Gross. So wait, you've seen Serbian film?
Yes.
Oh, dude, you totally have the biggest balls on our show.
I don't know what that is.
That's the one with the baby fucking.
Oh, I can't watch that. I can't go there.
Yeah, he like.
Yeah.
A death.
Yeah.
To death. To death. With his giant Next. Serbian penis.
Yeah.
I can't get down
so
with the baby
horrible.
Fucking.
No.
But at the same time, I'm like sickly fascinated by it. Like when that movie, it's like the same thing that I did with Human Centipede. Like I know everything about that movie. I know everything about that movie because I read the wiki. I like read all the articles. I listened to every podcast I could get my hands on. So like I know all the spoilers. I feel like I've seen that movie without actually having seen it.
We'll just keep it.
Okay. So, what else have you seen? Or is that your list, or you got some more?
Actually, this was my geekdom.
Okay.
The original series.
The OG with Robert Englund?
Yes.
Oh my god, how does it hold up?
You know, some of the special effects are really kind of cheesy. Yeah. But the storyline still holds up.
Right on. I used to love that when I was a kid, but I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
Netflix streaming.
I know, but I was worried that it would be ruined. Because, you know, like, sometimes you just can't go back. I watched something the other day, and I was like, god damn, this movie sucks. How did I enjoy this? Oh, Splice. Nice and rapey.
I liked it. I was quite disturbed by it.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that scene.
I have it. I still haven't seen it yet.
Oh, then we won't spoil it.
Yeah, I won't say anything. But
the best part, though, without spoiling, when they display the creatures... Mm-hmm. That part is fucking awesome.
You know, and I thought about that movie probably for like a week after.
It's it definitely is one that sticks with you. Yeah, you got to check it out, Sarah. If you watched Serbian film, you're probably not going to be as, you know, scandalized it as we were.
Yeah, I know, I was like.
But when you said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what did you say?
Oh, when you said nice and rapey, that reminded me. I saw the remake of I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, how was that? I heard that there's like a shotgun blast that goes through somebody's butt and out their mouth.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, I haven't seen it because, I mean, I've seen the original and I kind of was like, I hit sort of my rape maximum with that.
You did a lot of rape.
It was like, yeah, I mean, for you even heard the episode, right? And the thing is, I marathoned that shit. It was like So I spit on, it was like 5 rape revenge movies in a row, and I was just like raped out.
Well, not only that, but the original is like an 85-minute movie, and I'd say like 30 minutes of that is the rape scene.
I know.
It's just so hard.
It's gnarly, but, Summer.
Yeah. The one thing I do have to say about this one is, first of all, the kills were really interesting. Right. And the other thing is, at least, you know the scene with the slow guy in the original where she actually has sex with him and then...
Right.
There's none of that.
That's good.
You know, she doesn't have to stoop to that level to get these guys.
Right. Well, I mean, and do they have the person that's like developmental delay in that one too?
Yes. It's a good movie as a standalone, and especially for like a slasher.
Mm.
It has kind of that slasher feel to it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's more like a slasher than a rape, like than the standard rape revenge.
Kind of.
You're like, it's still pretty rapey.
It's still pretty rapey. Oh.
We're so going to hell for this conversation. Yes. No. Summer's just sitting there with a look on her face like, shame on you, Rachel. I do not want to be associated with this conversation.
I just don't do well with the whole rape, especially baby rape.
Oh, no, yeah, disturbing film's not for you, then.
I can't watch it.
All right, so what is that your list, or can I go?
Go for it.
All right, so I've seen a lot of stuff, too, but I'm going to boil them down to a couple. The first one I want to talk about was Troll Hunter. Have you guys seen this?
No.
Also known as Troll Jurgen or Troll Jurgeren. Okay, don't watch the trailers if you haven't, because it spoils all of the good troll action. Have you seen the trailer yet?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer! Because, like, the whole movie is, like, leading up to the reveals of the trolls. It's this weird... It's this Norwegian found footage film, and the whole thing is there's this group of kids, and they're making a film about poaching. Because somebody has been poaching bears, which is like a no-no in Norway. It's really difficult to get like a hunting license to kill bears because bears are awesome and they don't like it when you kill them. So there's these kids and they think they figure out who's poaching these bears, this guy. So they start following him and he like lives in this weird trailer and he's got like this big woolly Norwegian beard and he has this like super armored truck that's kind of like the Deathmobile we saw that day. But it's this armored truck, so they start following him, and he tells them, stop following me, but they won't. And they go into the forest, and they basically discover that trolls are real, and that the government is doing, like, actively keeping them hidden, and when they get out of, like, their designated areas where they're allowed to live, this guy has to hunt the trolls. But the kind of the weird thing that's going on is that there are all these trolls that are acting erratically, and they're getting out of the area where they're supposed to be. So he's having to kill, like, a lot of them. So then the film becomes about them wanting to document. Like, he's like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of being a troll hunter. I'm sick of it being quiet. So go ahead. You want to film me? I'm gonna take you. I'm going to show you the trolls. And so it's, like, basically, that's kind of the gist of the film, without giving anything away. It's not, like, a horror movie. Like, it's not scary. There are definitely suspenseful parts in it. But it's this weird... It's like a realistic... It's like a fantasy film that has been inserted into a documentary. Hmm. So it's kind of hard to explain. And it's got like this whole mythology to it. And they explain why like some trolls turn to stone in the sun and other ones do this and that. And so like that in and of itself makes it really interesting. Like the links that they go to explain why trolls look the way they do and different things that they do. I love any time you get like... where somebody, like, paints, like, a whole new kind of, like, world for you is cool, right? And it's definitely got some, like, dark humor to it, and, I don't know, it's really good. It's not a horror movie. If you go into it expecting a horror movie, you will be let down, but it's totally original. Even though it's a mockumentary, and we've seen those, like, found footage movies to death, this one's actually so different enough that it feels really fresh. And the Troll Hunter guy himself is awesome, so... Fully recommend Troll Hunter, and I don't want to spoil anything for you because it's...
the quality of the trolls.
Some of the CGI is a little funky, but, I mean, they're trolls. So, it's kind of hard to describe without talking about how they look. But it's also on this, like, huge scale. Like, it's weird. It's like this little weird fantasy movie, but, like, the scale itself is, it's, like, really... It's big, and it feels kind of magical because it's, like, in this part of the world that's sort of... I mean, I'm not saying that Norway's backwards or anything like that, but it's, like, it's very foreign to us. Like, it almost feels like a fantasy film setting just sort of in and of itself, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's definitely one of those movies that like I would probably like if I would buy it. I would definitely watch it again.
Buy it.
Yeah, I would buy it and I would show it to other people. I really enjoyed it. I just don't want to oversell it. You know what I mean? So that's why if I sound kind of like middle of the road with it, it's only because I don't want people to go, oh my God, this is going to like revolutionize movies forever. Rachel, you're a fucking idiot. So, I mean, but it's really good. It has tons of rewatch value. And if it sounds interesting to you, you're probably going to like it.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bloody Good Horror podcast just did an episode on it that was really good. So, but don't listen to it till you've seen the movie because they spoil everything. But I like that person. I mean, obviously, I have like a spoil. Podcast spoils everything because like I feel like it's like you got to spoil it. Like listening to the shows, I want to hear what people say about it. Like I don't need you to preview it for me. I need you to I want to hear a discussion on it. You know, so. So after the fact, definitely check that out. And okay, so then what else have I been watching? Let's see. Let me look at my list. Oh, have you seen this? I know for sure. Sarah, have you seen the movie Rubber?
No.
Okay,
I've heard that it breaks all kind of cinematic rules.
It's really a weird movie. So like the whole plot of the movie is there's this rubber tire that becomes like one day wakes up and it's sentient. And it's also a murderous tire.
Evil tire.
It's an evil tire. So it likes to kill. So it kills some animals and then it starts killing people. But the movie opens with like this fourth wall breaking monologue.
So weird.
That kind of, it's an interesting monologue because the whole monologue is, what is it? It's like, what is it? Like who the fuck cares or doesn't fucking matter. Doesn't fucking matter. He's like, why is E.T. green? Doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. Why is this chair here? Doesn't fucking matter. And it's basically the whole point. It kind of like, it's very meta because like, why is the tire alive? It doesn't really fucking matter. It's alive, you know? And some of the parts, the beginning part when it's learning how to do things and learns how to kill stuff is really funny and interesting and like darkly humorous. And then there's like this weird group of people that are with binoculars watching the movie unfold. So there's like an audience within the movie. So you're going back and forth between stuff that the audience is saying about the movie and then the story itself. It's very strange. But then those first 20 minutes are great.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of falls off the edge. It just goes on too long. It's the kind of thing that would be, like, a really awesome, quirky 20-minute movie. Like, if they took everything that happens in the movie and crunched it all down to 20 minutes, you would walk away from it like, what the fuck was that? That was the weirdest, coolest thing.
Yeah, that's something. It was too long.
But to fill out that full, like, feature-length running time, they just pad it with boringness. And the stuff that happens with the audience doesn't really make sense. And it just feels like they're only doing it because they need to fill time. And it's a shame because if they had, like I said, if they compacted it, like if somebody did like an edit of it, it would probably be a really great short film. But
very original.
Very original. But I do, the thing is I actually really like the tire, even though it's like murdering people.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. Maybe it's like sort of like the Pixar syndrome or something. Where like if you give something some like personality, it doesn't matter. You just a lamp, a rubber tire, whatever. So
charismatic.
It was a very charismatic, murderous tire. All right. So let's see. What else have I been watching? Stakeland. So I got a screener of this. I was very excited.
How did I forget about that?
I know. You watched it with me.
I have the worst memory,
You do have the worst memory. That's okay, though, because then it meant I got to bring something up. So, okay. Like, I always get I work in publishing, so I get PR things with screeners, offers for screeners all the time. But I have to have, like, a reason to request it. And I was like, I've been wanting to see Stakeland for, like, the longest time. Because everything I read was, it's this amazing movie. It's amazing. Ah. So when I got the PR thing, I was like, oh, Stakeland, I wish. And then it's, like, starring Kelly McGillis. I was like, yes! I have my lesbian, pass to Fairyland. So I was able to request a screener. And we watched, actually, you and I checked it out. And it's by the director of Mulberry Street. Have you ever seen that?
You know, I have it. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so, Mulberry Street, it definitely, some people like it, some people don't like it. I mean, it has good things about it, it has bad things about it. There's definitely some problems with it. But what was good about it was there's really, like there's not a lot of dialogue in either of these movies, but they're really, really character focused. And so, and it's a lot of like telling as opposed to saying, like you have to interpret a lot about these characters, but, and they're very grim and like the mood of both of those films are really, really grim. But it works, and it works in Mulberry Street to a certain extent, but I think it works even better in Stakeland because it's this post-apocalyptic time where the vampires have taken over. Like humans are now like, you know, an endangered species. They have like little pocket societies. And because obviously all the infrastructure is gone, the military is gone, the police are gone, you know, electricity is gone. They're kind of almost like, they're almost like frontier towns when they're like all about trading. And then there's like this one guy who goes through and he hunts vampires and he's got this kid that he's told from the kid's perspective, who's like his little protege. And they're trying to get to this place in Canada where supposedly there's no vampires and it's safe. So it's kind of a little bit like Zombieland in that it's a road movie, but it's nothing that's, like Zombieland. The only similarities they have. And yeah, and it's definitely and then on top of it, there's like this this undercurrent of religious fundamentalism in it. And do you watch Fringe?
No.
Okay, well, there's this character in Fringe called the Observer, and he's like, I don't know if he's an alien or what he is. He's like this weird bald dude that like is always trying to like reset the balance between the universes. And he plays the like religious fundamental leader of these people who feel that their job is to like worship and serve the vampires. So like they will grab people off the road and feed them to the vampires, basically. And nice. It's really cool. Like the movie itself is definitely like it's a very grim kind of like lots of vast empty landscapes and long periods of where there isn't a ton of dialogue. But at the same time, like it has this great atmosphere.
The vampires are really freaking scary. The
vampires are really, it's actually pretty scary. It's got some good gore. Like one of the first things you see is a vampire and it's dark. Like one of the very first things you see is a vampire eating a baby.
Awesome.
I wasn't ready for that.
I know. You're like, that was a baby. You said like three times. Like that was a baby. He's crouched up in this thing up in the rafters, and he just like he's like drinking the baby, and he just like drops it on the ground. I was like, this is gonna be awesome. And it was really, really, really good. I mean, it's definitely not like scare a minute kind of thing. It feels like a really competent, well made film. In the same way that something like Let the Right One In is not a scary all the time movie, but it's like. Like a character-driven drama, but in the setting of a horror movie. That's how Stakeland is. So,
oh, cool.
If you like that kind of thing, you're really gonna like Stakeland. And I've seen a ton of other stuff, but let me just skip to one more so we can move on to our. We haven't even started the movie part of this.
And if I could just take a second, I'm probably gonna have to leave about 10:30, 10:35.
Okay, well we're gonna get through this. Let me do my very last one, and then we'll move on. I'll save the next one when Ariel's on here because I gotta give her shit. She recommended some wacky ass movies.
Hear that, Ariel?
So moving on, the last one I saw, and I'm guessing since you don't go to movie theaters, Sarah, and you haven't watched it here yet, I'm the only one that on the podcast has seen it. But is Insidious?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, well I won't spoil anything. So obviously it's directed by James Wan, who wrote and directed along with what's the other guy's name, Lee Whannell, Saw, and this movie stars Lee Whannell, well in a bit part. It's the new one. It's like it's kind of like, and it also one of the producers is Oren Peli, who did Paranormal Activity, was the director of Paranormal Activity, and there's definitely a Paranormal Activity vibe to this movie. Okay, so I don't want to spoil anything because let me just say off the bat, like some people like it, some people don't. I am totally in the like it camp. Like I am 100% on board with this movie. It scared the fucking shit out of me.
I'm glad to hear that it's actually scary.
Dude, movies don't scare me anymore. Like I've watched so many horror movies that I don't get scared anymore. Like the last time I really, really got scared by a movie was The Ring. And that was, like, when I saw it in the theater years ago, okay? Like, nothing... I mean, I can definitely feel suspense and get kind of weirded out for a second. But, like, that kind of fear that sticks with you after the movie to where you, like, don't want to turn the hall light off because you don't want to be in the dark. I haven't had that in years. That, seriously, I was scared to be alone. I was scared to be alone after it was over. I would, like, Randy fell asleep. I went and woke Randy up because because I didn't want to be in the living room by myself because I was so freaked out by this movie. It is fucking scary. So, I mean, and it may be not for everyone, but it was for me. It plays on all of my fears. So, and it's one of those movies that the scariness happens in daylight. So it makes it even scarier. You know what I mean? Because yeah. It's like nothing is safe. You can't even be like at one point the woman's walking around her house in the middle of the day and some shit pops off. So like there's just like no safe time. Anyways, part of it is, and I think like right away it's scary because they do something kind of like very old school and cool is they start building the atmosphere from the very like opening frame. Like the music is like this old like organ style music, and the credits, they keep showing like pictures, and then something scary like will happen in the picture, like a face will like appear in the mirror, or like something will move that shouldn't move, you know what I mean? Like it's very like paranormally, but it's creepy, and the music itself is it's like that kind of music that just like crawls under your skin, and then it just like flashes the title card, Insidious, like with like really loud music, and you're like, ooh. This movie, at one point, I like almost wanted to leave. I was like crawling out of my fucking skin. Yes,
I gotta come out.
Cool.
I don't want to. The thing is, I know probably you guys are braver than me, so it won't have the same effect. But after it was over, Brienne texted me to ask me if she should see it, and I told her not to. Because she was scared by Paranormal Activity, and if Paranormal Activity scares you, this movie's way fucking scarier to me. Like the other day, I was kind of like half awake, half asleep. I started thinking about a face in the movie, and I had to get out of bed because I didn't want to be alone in my room.
Maybe we should watch this during the day.
No, we should watch it at night. Make it as scary as possible. Okay, so anyways. So yeah, it has Patrick. What's his name? Patrick, he was Night Owl in The Watchmen, and he was like the pedophile in Hard Candy. Patrick Wilson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Rose... I should probably write these things down so I don't sound like such an idiot. Rose, what's her butt from Damages? She's really cute. She looks like a little doll. She's really pretty. You know what I'm talking about? You're so Damages. Good show. Oh, she was the army chick in 28 Weeks Later.
Okay.
So they're a married couple, and they've got three kids, and they move into this new house. It's like an old, creaky house. You know what I mean? And like the perfect setting for a haunted house movie. And right away, stuff starts happening, and God, I don't want to go any further because I'm just like getting chills too thinking about it. Like right away, stuff starts happening, and you know, it's like that situation where the dad's not home and the mom is, and the mom is like saying this stuff's happening, and he's not seeing it. But I will say, at one point, because the thing that always bothers me is like the dude is always like this, like he's like the non-believer, and he's like he'll be like, oh, you need to get help. Or if it's Paranormal Activity, he'll set the Ouija board on fire and talk a bunch of shit to the demon and make it worse. The husband in this is not that at all. Like, he wants to believe his wife. He's on her team. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for him, but he's just like, no, I believe, if you say these things are happening, I believe you that they're happening. But then they also kind of have a tragedy in the middle of this pretty early in the movie that's kind of like, I don't know. Whatever. I don't want to say anymore. I don't want to ruin it. But definitely check out Insidious. If you can, I don't think it's still in theaters, but if it is, you should see it in theaters. Go like I did in the middle of a weekday. Tell your boss that you have a doctor's appointment and go to the like I did and go to the movies, because it was me, like a couple behind us, who, by the way, were laughing at me because I was screaming like a little bitch, and and this married couple with their kid. Like, I saw the little kid come in. I was like, oh, fuck, that's $6 I'm never going to get back. God damn it, you know?
How old was the kid?
The kid was, like, so good, though. I heard the kid one time. I mean, like, what was the kid doing there in the first place? That's a whole nother debate. But that's that kid. That's that parent's problem, not mine. I was worried about that kid talking through the whole movie, and it was silent. Or maybe I just couldn't hear it over my own screams. Maybe that's it. So anyways, I think that's probably it for me. I've got a bunch of other stuff, but I'll save that for the next episode. So that's what you've been watching. Times. Okay, so should we move on to the movies that we actually are here to talk about today?
Sure.
All right, okay. So let's start off, first of all, with the movie Wreck. It's from 2007. It's a Spanish kind of like found footage, shaky cam type film. directed by, I'm going to say these names wrong, so I'm sorry, my Spanish friends. Prepare to be disappointed with my bad pronunciation. Jaime or Jamie Balaguero and Paco Plaza, which again, I'm sure I'm totally fucking that up. So they directed it, and it was written by the two of them, along with someone named Luis Verdejo. Verdejo. Oh my god.
Hey, your Spanish is better than mine.
Okay. That's good. Okay, so, and obviously this movie, everybody knows, kind of spurred a simultaneous remake. While it was, they were being shot almost simultaneously in America, they made Quarantine, which changed the ending of the movie, which is some bullshit. But at least it did star Jennifer Carpenter, who is hot stuff. Love me some Jennifer Carpenter.
Yeah, but I can understand changing the ending of the movie for American audiences, because while America likes to think of itself as a religious country, right, we tend to find it more believable that it's going to be what they made it to be in Quarantine versus what they made it to be in Rec, because in Rec it's religion based.
I know what you mean. I mean, to a certain extent, like, America only has religion around, like, gay marriage and abortion. Everything else, it's just like, everything else, though, is just like, you know, they're not having it. But I also felt that it was a little bit exploitative of, like, the 9/11 fear, that, like, it was, like, there was, like, a terrorist angle to it, and so, I don't know, I'm, like, cynical about that.
I did not care for the whole terrorist.
You're like, those are my peeps.
Yeah, like, I was like, really? So now terrorists are going to make zombies happen? Like,
right.
Come on.
Plus, I mean, did the end have that same girl?
No. It was like this weird, I'm trying to think. It looked like one of those, the naked aliens on Futurama in a diaper.
Oh, kind of, boo. Yeah, yeah, boo, naked aliens. Those things are gross.
But, you know what I mean?
But still, God. I'm seriously, like, I'm getting ahead of myself, but the chick at the end of this movie is one of the scariest terrifying villains in film history, I think.
Mm-hmm.
She is, okay, we'll get to that. Anyways, so, does anybody want to do the synopsis? I wrote notes, so I can do it if you guys want me
to. You can do it, because I don't
want
to go off of this.
Okay.
And I'm pointing to my head.
Why don't you read us your notes, Sarah?
Okay, my notes. Angela, cute.
Okay, well then I guess I'll be in charge. Summer's looking at her blank hand again. All right, so the movie opens up with this woman, Angela Vidal, I guess is her name. Angela, anyways. This girl, Angela, and she is on the... she's at a fire department, and she's being filmed for her show that she does for Spanish television called While You're Asleep. Anyways.
It's like a show you'd see, like, on PBS.
Totally. Like, yeah. California's Gold with Huell.
Yeah.
What's his name? Huell Hauser. So, okay. So she, so, like, you, the first, like, I would say, like, 15 minutes of the movie is her walking around the fire department, talking to the firemen, goofing around, kind of having fun. And I like this part of the movie. I mean, it's not like the most exciting part of the movie, but this is where you get your character development. You kind of understand who Angela is based on the interactions, the sort of asides that she has with the cameraman. Not so much with, like, the firemen, because she's sort of on with them, whereas with the cameraman, when she's saying things to the cameraman, you kind of get an idea that she's really ambitious, she's smart, it's important to her that the show goes well. She's worried that it's not going to be that interesting, and she's hoping for something exciting to happen. And like I said, she's very serious about the show catching everything, which is going to be important later, because she's like repeatedly like, did you get that? You must tape everything. So you kind of have to know going into it why she would be so gung-ho about him carrying the camera.
Well, also there's sort of a self-consciousness that she presents when she's doing those asides with the camera, with the cameraman in the fire station.
Right.
And so it later on when she's like, did you get that? Did you get that? Or when she's, you know, confronting the cop, you know, it's just like she develops there, you know, into a different character.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Because, man, she gets all up in that cop's face. Yeah. She's like, rah, 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 rah. I was like, ooh, look at that Spanish go-go. I wish I could understand every word of that. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so eventually they get a call. And, you know, she's able to jump in the fire truck with them. And they've been called because someone is stuck in an apartment. And she gets to the scene. So they go up into the apartment. And, first of all, I want one of these apartments. How badass are these fucking apartments? Is that how they get down in Spain? Because between that and the siestas, I need to move
to Spain.
Seriously. They walk in and this is the first time you kind of see one of the like infected people. And it's like this older woman who keeps pulling up her skirt. I'm like, no granny panties, thank you. She's really freaky looking. She's got like the blood in her hair and all over her white nightie. And she's like acting really erratically. And they're like, they're trying to talk to her like you do when you don't know you're dealing with like scary demon zombies. And she ends up attacking this cop and biting his face. And I love that part where they like, she like tears a chunk out of his face. You remember that?
That is like, cool.
Right. Yeah. I was like, oh, I love that. So they like run downstairs because they want to get this guy out. But by the time they get down to the bottom, the building has already been quarantined. And they say that they're under, what is it? It's like B in C or something like that. And it's like, it stands for like biological, nuclear, and chemical quarantine. Which, how fucking scary would that be?
I would piss my pants.
Because like, which of those is worse? The biological, the nuclear, like, which one are you hoping for? You're like, I hope it's just chemical weapons.
No, and when they get down there, you just realize, oh, they're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
And that should happen fast.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they think they're just going there for, like, a routine call, and all of a sudden,
they had no
there's,
clue.
Like, face biting in quarantine. Oh, no. Hell
it's
no.
It's a little weird that suddenly that fast that they have, like, you know, that government knows to quarantine off that building. I never thought about that.
But no, the government was already en route because they were tipped off by the dog at the
vet. Well, we don't know this yet. We don't know this yet.
We just know that at this point, we just know that there's some elderly zombie lady and all of a sudden they're getting quarantined.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so at this point, she's gone in with two firemen. One of the firemen helped the guy get down, but one of the other fireman is missing. And he makes a little reappearance at this point. She's arguing with the cop who wants her to stop taping, and he like touches the camera and she like freaks out on his ass. And in the background, all of a sudden, you just see this body bam fall down the center of the stairway. And it is so shocking the first time that you see that. Like I mean, because it's totally like background. And it's you know, like, there's so many cheap jump scares out there where it's, like, the cat or, like, loud music. This was, like, a legit awesome jump scare to me. And then...
Yeah, that was cool.
And I liked... It was so fucking bloody.
It was.
You know, you never really see that when people fall down things. There's, like, a little bit of blood, but it was so bloody. And it just... it's nasty. And then they showed, like, the bite on his face, and it was all, grisly. I loved it.
That was... Not that part, but later on when they have them laid out in the shop and the vet's putting the needle into his face, that was the absolute worst part of it. It was just like, oh.
What is that about needles? Needles are the worst. Like, I mean, he got his face bitten off. You can get stabbed with, like, a big knife, and it's not that gross. But you put a needle on screen, and I am just, like, crawling out of my skin.
Me too.
You know, needles don't freak me out that much.
Really? No. You would be a great heroin addict. High five.
I know, and look at these veins, babe.
Oh my god, you are born for it. What a wasted potential. That's what I'm looking at. Look at that thing.
Look at that.
You tap that out right now. So at this point, somebody realizes there's this rollaway door.
Also, the police outside, or whoever's in charge outside, tells the two cops that they're in charge.
Right.
And, you know, and the cops are like, fuck, what are we in charge of? We don't know what the hell's going on. So I find that just, like, such a fuck situation.
Right.
That they're thrown into, we're in charge, and people are looking at them like, okay, what do we do? We're stuck in this building. And the cops are like, they're as fucked as the other people.
Yeah,
they
totally.
They don't have nothing up on them.
So, okay, so they decide they're going to open this sliding door because they think there might be a way to get out there. And at this point, actually, this is kind of a cool part because this is where they like take a minute and they go back and they actually like do one-on-one interviews. Like the pace kind of slows down, gives you like a little bit of a breather. And this is like the moment where you kind of find out how, like who is in the apartment building, who your supporting cast is. And they don't do just like an information dump. They actually kind of, they make it interesting by like doing like a talking head one-on-one sort of interview style, because she's still shooting a TV show. And it also brings back the reality of like, why the fuck is this guy still taping? Right. Because they're shooting they're shooting a show. So they, there's like the very debonair gay man. There's the Chinese family. There's the woman with the sick kid who wants to sue. And her little daughter is like sweating. She's got tonsillitis, allegedly. Mm. Can't see it, but I'm doing air bunnies. let's see. What else? Who else is in the, there's an old couple. The guy kind of almost seems like he may be senile.
Well, there's the nurse.
Oh, and the nurse, right? The nurse who's like attending to the he's like an intern basically, because she like asks him like, "Are you a doctor?" He's like, "No, I give shots. Like that's what I do. He's like, "I'm just doing what I can to stabilize him or whatever." And you get to see like the fun racism in the building, because like they're all blaming the Chinese people because they eat raw fish. And
I love the Chinese accent. Speaking Spanish.
Too. I know. I love that.
I love that.
What is it about like a combination accent that is so much fun? My new boss is German, but she's like lived in Australia for like several years. So she's saying all these like Australia-isms, like Bob's your uncle and you reckon, but like with a German accent.
You should hear my uncles who are Arabs that own liquor stores speak Spanish.
Oh, I bet that's awesome. It cracks me up. All right. So, and at this point you find out that the woman with the sick girl who wants to sue, her husband had gone out to get antibiotics at this point. And there's also this penthouse of someone who owns this penthouse, lives in Madrid, is never there. So everybody's accounted for except for the old dude. But you also find out that the little girl has a dog that was sick that was at the veterinary's office, which you mentioned becomes important later. And I want to say something that I love about this at this point, because now I've seen both the movies and I've gone back. Is there's all these little Easter eggs that you don't even really hear them until after the fact. Like, we mentioned that the husband's out getting antibiotics. It doesn't really matter. It's not really germane to the story. It makes sense, you know what I mean, that it would be something she would mention, like, this is where my husband is, because it's like, it's a time where somebody would answer that way. But it doesn't move the plot forward, backward, doesn't matter. But in the second movie, he becomes very important.
Very important, yeah.
And I think there's a lot of those as you go through the movie that you maybe don't necessarily, like, they mention, like, later on when I get to it, they mention something that also plays really important in the second movie. And with the third one that's going to be coming out, they say that there's a bunch of Easter eggs in both the movies that will make sense you see the next one. So it's kind of like there's some really smart writing here. Like, either they're really smart about writing it going into it, or they're really smart about figuring out like little cues, little open ending things that you don't necessarily hear that could be parlayed into plot
makes
points
me kind
later.
Of want to rewatch them again.
Well, that was my third time through, and it was still fucking good. So that should tell you right there.
Okay, yeah, I've seen Wreck, I think, two or three times now, and I've enjoyed it every time.
So at this point, a health inspector shows up. So they bring in this health inspector, and he's got like the full like Ebola outfit on, you know?
Yeah.
And they take him in.
That's never good.
Oh no, that's so not what you're like on the BNC.
Yeah.
And Ebola outfit? No.
No.
Okay, so they take him into the textile mill, and they like are separated from the group. But of course, Angela and Pablo, the cameraman, are not going to be having that. Because then how are we going to see it? So they go, they like sneak in, and they're like looking over this wall to see what's going on. And the two people are like laid out on the table, and they handcuff them to the table. So like right away you're like, oh, this ain't good. You don't really usually handcuff people that are injured. So like, right, that's your first. The health inspector makes the mistake of turning his back for a second. Like, gives them back, and, like, both of the freaking, the injured people attack. The fireman and the cop manage to make it out, but they shut the other two guys in there with the, like, the biters, because
they had to, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because they had to, because they'd both been bitten. So, at this point, they explain, like, it's contagious, it passes through saliva and through blood, and you find out the reason that quarantine happened so fast was they were led there by the dog situation. Do you want to explain that?
the little girl, Jennifer, her dog was sick, and so he went to the vet, and then it turns out that the dog got really sick and was really lethargic, and they thought the dog had died, but then the dog, like, came back and killed all the other animals and had to be put down. And it took, like, enough tranquilizers to tranquilize an elephant to be able to put it down.
Damn. That's a pissed off dog. Yeah. You know what I was thinking? I wonder if this is going to be one of those little Easter eggs. Because we know that the dog got put down. We don't know if the dog bit someone.
Oh my god.
We don't know if the other animals gotten bit. Did they get put down? They didn't say that. Wow. What about the vets and the vet techs and all the people that were trying to sedate the dog?
Outbreak.
Uh-huh. And the fourth movie is called Apocalypse. So
the fourth?
There's
they
two.
They already did the third one?
No, but there's gonna be four. So that's just a prediction. I don't know that that's the case. But I, knowing how they managed to do, like, pull things from the earlier movie for the second one, that's one of those little like opportunities to like work on.
Well, not only that, but you notice that the infection is actually accelerating, because it took quite a while for the other two, for you know everybody to kind of get it. I mean, the little girl's been sick for how long?
Right.
We're already like 40 minutes to the movies. And since the cop got bit, and he's barely come back. Same with the fireman, but suddenly the nurse is infected and raging.
Right. You know what? I'm glad you addressed that, because it's I didn't notice it as much in this one, but in the next one, I was like, damn, that happened fast.
Really
like
fast.
That's like 28 days later style. You know, like it happened really fast. So that makes sense. And I guess you do find out that the virus mutates. But I felt like that was a little bit of a plot hole. But I guess maybe you're right. There's a precedent there. Like, it's happening faster and faster and faster. So, that makes sense. All right. Thank you for filling a plot hole for me. All right. So, once they realize that there's a dog had something to do with it, and the little girl mentioned the dog in the interview, she asked the cops, like, is the dog's name Max? And he's like, yeah, it is. And all the neighbors, like, look at the little girl. And the girl's, like, sweating. She's got, like, total sweat hair. And
she's all pale.
But her lips are all cracked and bleeding. And the mom's like, it's just tonsillitis. It's just tonsillitis. No, it's not, bitch.
Because then what happens? So the mom is holding the little girl in her arms. And the little girl just turns her head and bites into her cheek, right?
A cheek or neck or something.
Yeah.
She's just like, argh!
So
well, see, that scene was great, too, because earlier, the mother was the one that was like, oh, it's the Chinese people. It's that old man. It's because they eat raw fish, and, you know, it's all their fault. It's that we're all sick and being quarantined. And then, you know, the source of the source turns out to be her dog, and now her daughter has it.
Right. Right, exactly. Just like, irony. But see, like, and as a fan of zombie movies, because it's definitely, I mean, it's not a zombie movie ultimately, but it definitely kind of has some of the same rules as a zombie movie. Like, we knew that little sweaty-ass, pasty kid was, like, it was going to be a wrap for her. And so, like, there was kind of, like, this ticking clock,
when
you know?
Gonna happen.
But I feel like it paid off well. Because I didn't expect the kid to do it right when she did it. Like, I did get the good jolt out of it.
Yeah.
You know? But it's at this point, like, it's, like, hit critical mass. All hell fucking breaks loose at this point. Like, there's no, like, little safe group of people down in the lobby anymore.
That's when the gay guy tells him about the drain.
Right.
Basically, there's, like, a storm drain that leads out into the street. So they have to get the keys, but the nurse has the keys because he's the building association, the tenant association president.
Right.
So he's got keys to everything in the building.
All of the neighbors basically have been infected.
Yeah.
And so, like, Mono, the fireman, just starts, like, killing his way up the stairs. He breaks the chick's neck. He, like, stomps somebody to death.
There's the,
Oh, that's right. He's like, go get the mallet! I was like, oh, no! he just, like, kind of kills his way through the neighbors, and they get into the guy's house. And, like, this is the part that, like, I love this part. It's so suspenseful, where she's looking for the keys, and she can't find them. It's a whole fucking apartment to look through. And she's like tearing the place apart.
Because you don't know what keys you're looking for either.
No.
They're just keys.
In some dude's house you don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, where does he keep the keys? Where do you keep, like, going to Sarah's house, find her keys. I dare
sir,
you.
I'm on my way.
Anytime.
So, okay. So she eventually, like, tears the place apart and they find the keys. They're going to go downstairs because they want to get through the textile mill to find the sewer, this grate that's going to take them to the sewer, which is the other little Easter egg in this, because that becomes how the other people enter it in the second movie. Is that involves this grate. But, I mean, it's a throwaway line. Like, this is what they're going to do. But, it doesn't even matter. You don't even think about it again. Because the minute they get outside, there's freaking zombie apocalypse happening. And there's this grate. I love this. There's this point where they look down the stairwell, like, through the center. And all the faces, like, all the screaming, like, possessed faces look up at them.
That's cool.
Including the fireman. You're like, oh, man.
Yeah, that was a sad moment.
Yeah.
One thing about these infected really scary to me was the screams.
They're good screams.
Yeah.
They're really good screams. They're really inhuman. Like, the little girl's high-pitched scream doesn't sound like a little kid scream. It sounds very uncanny. You know what I mean? Like, but it also doesn't sound like super produced on a synthesizer. No. It just sounds
inhuman.
It really
sounds like a bird of prey.
Right. Yeah, right. Something that could naturally occur, but is just totally wrong coming out of a little girl's mouth, you know?
Well, the use of sound in this is great. The sound editing was wonderful.
You're absolutely right. The thing is there really is an art to these shaky cam movies. I mean, I've seen enough shaky cam shit.
Yeah.
To know that if I can sit through one more than once, that's a sign that there is some artistry to it. Like, the camera focuses on what it needs to focus on when it needs to. They find creative ways to allow you to see things happen on screen that don't feel like, okay, stop, put the camera on a tripod for this part. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like those moments are integrated really effectively into the movie. But then, like you said, the sound editing is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge because you don't have, like, the standard way of looking at the film where they're showing you all the scary stuff and setting up the shots just in such a way as to, like, you know, to present these kinds of things. You really are relying on the sound to like, make up for the sense that you've lost. You know what I mean? And I think you're 100% right. They did a great job with that. So they end up running up to the penthouse, which is the one, like, mentioned briefly earlier, is owned by this dude in Madrid that never, ever is there. It's just locked up all the time.
Well, there is an earlier line when she's doing the interviews that they mention the penthouse, and Manu asks, well, is there anybody up there? And the mother says, oh, I won't go up there. You know, none of us will go up there.
Oh, I don't think I caught that.
Yeah.
Me neither.
So they get in there, and, like, right away, it is, like, my worst nightmare. Religious stuff everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I swear. Like, there's weird, creepy, science-y stuff, too, which is disturbing. But the religious stuff, dude, it would have been a wrap. I don't want to see, like little pictures of little kids next to crucifixes.
No,
that's just not
never a good sign.
It's not cute. That is not the interior design motif that I will be looking forward to in my future. It's not something I want to run into. So they start looking at the wall because they're trying to figure out, I don't know, at this point, if they're just trying to, like, get the lay of the land or they're just freaked out by what they see. But she starts looking at all the shit that's on the wall, and there's all of these newspaper clippings about a possessed girl that was, and she's kidnapped, and, like, all these, like, you're kind of piecing together from flashes of headlines that there's this girl, this Madero's girl, who was supposedly possessed, potentially possessed, that ended up going missing. And as they're digging through things, they see, like, all these, like, creepy photos, and they stumble across, like, this old reel-to-reel recording. And there's something, the quality of a voice that comes out of a reel-to-reel recorder just totally creeps me out.
Yeah.
That anytime you get one of those, and it's never something good, because you know it's coming out of, like, some psychiatrist's office or something. Like, it's not good. Like, have you ever seen Session 9?
Yes.
Okay, like, the creepiest parts of that fucking movie is the voice.
Tapes.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I won't spoil it for you then, because I'm getting chills. See, that was one that scared me.
It's on Netflix Instant still.
Oh, is it on Instant? Do you have Netflix?
I don't.
Oh, damn. You know what? We should watch that. I would totally... We should have that be one of the topics of the new revamped Zombie Girls.
Okay.
Because that's a good-ass movie. It's like... And it has David Caruso in it. I don't know how that happened, but he's in it. And also, it has one of the guys... Have you been watching The Killing? Either of you? That's totally off-topic.
No.
Have you been watching The Killing?
No cable.
Oh, bummer. It's so good.
Yeah, I don't have cable right now either.
So anyways, they put it on, and it's like this creepy priest, and he's talking about like... isolating the enzyme, that he's discovered the enzyme, but it may be really contagious, and that they're working on this vaccine, but it turns out it is contagious, and it spreads like a flu, and it's so
unpredictable.
Yes.
Volatile.
Yes. And like, basically, and then towards the end of it, they're like, okay, the Vatican has said that we need to kill her, but then for some reason, instead, what they end up doing is, he's like, okay, I'm gonna have to follow the ritual to seal the room. So he's sealed the girl, whatever it is, you're assuming it's the Medeiros girl because of all the things on the wall. He's sealed her in the room. So then you're like, oh, fuck. You ain't alone.
Devil fucked.
Right. They're looking around the room, and they go into this room, and there's like a little, you know, access to the attic thing, which is never good. You see one of those attic accesses? I don't care if there's demon-possessed zombies on the other side of the door. You never go in that crawl space. It's not going to be good. At the very least, there will be spiders. So just stay out, right?
Possibly zombie spiders.
And there's also like the Grudge ghost up there and spiders, and it's just bad. Just don't do it. But he doesn't listen to me, and he opens the access, and they do the total camera pan around, so you're just like, and those, I mean, I know it's sort of like a trope, you've seen it in a lot of things,
but you're just waiting and waiting. And
it fucking works!
And it's like,
ooh, and it's like this creepy, like, pasty, like, almost like dusty, bloody little evil kid. It's like, jumps out. And it's one of those things that, I actually had forgotten all about it. Because what happens next overshadows it so much.
Yeah.
But then, of course, a very important element in the second film. Obviously, crawl space ain't working out. So they close the crawl space, and but the kid has already knocked the spotlight off the camera, and they can't figure out how to turn the lights on. So they're like pitch blackness in this room, and so the camera switches to night vision, which immediately makes everything 100 times more creepy.
Oh yeah.
So creepy. Like something about the night vision, the way what it does to your eyes, like your pupils. Yeah. It's so creepy. It's so, like, animalistic looking and just, ugh. Anyways, so they've got the night vision going, and it's at this point they see something kind of, like, off in the other room. Like, there's something tall and gaunt and awkward, like, moving around. And, as you do, they start fucking hiding from it. But not before we all get a very good look at this, like it's this tall, emaciated, stringy-haired, like, distorted body with, like, topless. She's, like, it's a female. She's topless. So her scary, saggy boobs are out. And then she's got, like, enormous granny panties on that not fit. And she's just, like, kind of cruising around, flailing her arms, looking horrifying.
Well, she's got a mallet in her hand, and she keeps knocking stuff down with the mallet.
Right. Yeah. And, man... Seriously, like, truly one of the scariest, like, baddies ever. Such an awesome reveal, too. Because...
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but correct me if I'm wrong. In Quarantine, when they initially come across that figure, isn't it, like, standing there scratching its ass or something?
Summer?
It's almost kind of comical when they come across it.
You know, I don't remember.
I have not seen Quarantine. I've only seen the beginning of Quarantine.
Oh,
because I'm like I've seen the beginning where she's like playing basketball with the firemen.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You saw Quarantine, I saw Wreck, and we were kind of like, "Move over, Bacon. This one's better," you know. Like, yeah. But I can't speak to that one. I just know that like it's a shame that if that's the case, if they really introduced it in a comical way, how wasted that was, because. She's horrifying to me.
She is. She's terrifying.
I mean, how often do you, like, is there, like, do you get the reveal and it's kind of disappointing once you, like, really get a good look at something?
Mm-hmm.
Where in this case, the more you saw her, the more disturbing she got.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Summer, you're nodding your head, but nobody can see that.
No, I agree. Sorry. No, I agree.
Summer's, like, adamantly, yeah. Like, yeah, that's deep.
I'm thinking about her.
Okay. So, and obviously, when you see that, you can't stay quiet for too long. She ends up hearing them and chasing after them. She kills she comes at you, you see first person, obviously. She attacks the cameraman, takes him out. And it's great. It's like such a great little, because, you know, she's like frenzied and it's just totally like, chill inducing when she like attacks him. And after that, you see Angela crawling around until she finds the camera. And she's in the camera. She can't quite, I don't think she realizes she's right there. So she's kind of laying there listening, trying to be quiet. And something grabs her, drags her off screen, roll credits. It's such a great ending.
It is.
Quarantine fucked up by putting that in their trailer, too. When I saw the trailer, I was like, wow, I guess the movies end exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. No. My girlfriend and I saw Quarantine in the theater, and we pissed walking out of the theater. Like, really? That's how it ends?
If I can say something about work, because I got to go back to work. It's okay. 10:35.
God, is it really?
It is.
Damn.
I know.
That went by fast.
2 hours went by hella fast. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. The subtitles will not bother you. I am not one that could sit through subtitles all the time. I forgot that they were there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, like, the best part.
Right. Right.
Because a lot of people won't watch it because of the subtitles.
And that's a shame.
And it really is. Because, you know, you'll be like, are you in the mood for that? And I'll be like, no, I can't do subtitles
I always
today.
Throw it out there, too, because I know when you know,
I can't do it. I have serious, like, ADD issues. Like, I can't concentrate. Well, I forgot that movie's not even in English. So, I mean, that's a good sign.
That is a very good sign.
If you're not watching this movie because of the subtitles, you get over it. Watch it.
Yeah.
It won't bug you. I give it an A+.
All right. Plus. So you got to roll, huh?
Yeah, I got to go back to the hellhole.
I'm sorry.
Good night.
Thank you. So, okay, so we got Summer's take on Wreck One. What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I really liked it. You know, I like the fact that in the fire station, and you know how when you said you saw Quarantine until they were playing basketball?
Yeah, well, I saw until they got to the building. So yeah, I saw that whole beginning section.
There's that whole thing with the fireman, you know, I bet I can nail her. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, come on, guys. You know, that is just not necessary. And Quarantine, also, they kept trying to build this, like, sort of flirtatious relationship with, mm-hmm. One of the firemen and Jennifer Carpenter, and it just didn't work. And I like the fact that in Wreck, that was just gone.
Right. Well, it's totally unnecessary. I mean, like, I don't blame the fireman because Jennifer Carpenter is hot, but at the same time, it's totally not necessary. And like the firemen in this movie, like they do feel like, especially Mono, like feels very heroic, and what's that?
Brotherly.
Right. Like a protector kind of character. Yeah. Absolutely. You're totally right. You're absolutely right. I don't know. I've not heard any reason for me to go back and watch Quarantine. You know what I mean? Like, no one's been like, oh, but there's this one thing that it does better. Everything I've heard is that it's, oh, it's good, but it's Wreck did it better. So, yeah. Okay. So, right on. So, that's two votes for Wreck. I'm totally on board with you. Like, I think, like I said, I think that when it comes to shaky cam movies, this one stands at the top of the pack. Like, it feels actually like, it doesn't feel like a gimmick. It feels like an actual storytelling device. There's not a ton of character development that happens in this first movie, but you definitely, because they take the time at the beginning of the movie, I feel like you do root for Angela. You want her to get out. You want her to survive. Whereas a lot of times in these kinds of movies, the people are so fucking stupid. You're just like, all right, let's hand out these Darwin Awards as fast as possible and make it as bloody as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, but like I said, you know, there is a little bit of development in her character, because at the fire station, you know, like, she goes through and she's like, oh God, I'm worried this is going to be boring. And, you know, even in the fire truck, she's like, turn on your alarm. Oh, wait, no, can we reshoot that? I didn't mean to say alarm. I meant siren. That sounds dumb. Let's reshoot that. Let me say siren. And where they're just like, you know, and the cameraman keeps telling her, no, you're fine. And then it's like, once things start rolling, she's just like, you know, when she's pushing the cop around, oh, touch my fucking camera, you know, it's just, she really just steps up to the plate and, you know.
Yeah. She's a toughie. I do like her. And that part where she's like getting in his face. I mean, that's definitely a trait I enjoy in a woman. But yeah, overall, I think there's some good practical gore. There's some genuinely frightening, surprising, suspenseful moments. I think that, I mean, now looking back, obviously, I know a lot more about the infected than I did, but like there's a good twist the first time you watch it. Like, I did not see the religious aspect coming, and it's a twist in a way that doesn't feel cheap. Like, it doesn't feel like a twist for the sake of a twist. Like, it actually, yeah. And it takes what could have been kind of a 28 Days Later style movie and makes it its own thing. Yeah. We hadn't seen that before. We've seen demonic possession movies, and we've seen like infected movies, but we've never seen something where the way that they're exhibiting that kind of possession as being really, really terrifying. Yeah. And also frightening. Like, it's not just, I mean, not that the exorcism isn't scary, but like from a global perspective, like this is like a real serious, threat, you know what I mean? Like, there's,
yes,
it brings it into like the modern fear of infection and disease, but kind of like this old-timey kind of twist. I don't know. I really love this movie. I recommend it. People who don't like that type of movie are not gonna like this, but if you like 28 Days Later, you like sort of fast-moving zombies, or you like religious horror, there's definitely something here. I think most people have seen this movie now, but it's definitely worth revisiting.
Well, that and the shaky cam isn't as shaky.
Right.
There's not a lot of quick like pan arounds with the camera or kind of thing. So the shaky cam is actually a lot smoother than it is in most shaky cam movies.
Yeah. That makes such a difference. I'm just kind of glad that fad is sort of faded to a certain extent. Like, for a while there, like, every movie was shaky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's enough. All right. So, apparently I did not get enough of it after all, because I signed right up for Rec 2, which is the next movie we're going to be talking about. Do you remember this one well enough to do a little synopsis, or do you want me to take it?
Go ahead and take it.
People are going to be so sick of my voice by the end of this episode. Oh, well, too bad. I'll try to maybe not go into as much detail. All right. So this movie kicks off, let's see here. It came out 2 years later, 2009. Rec 2, another Spanish horror movie directed by Jaime Balagueró and Paco Plaza again, who I didn't mention this last time, but Jaime Balagueró also directed Darkness and The Fragile, or Fragile. Have you seen either of those movies?
No.
Darkness, it's this movie with Anna Paquin. It's okay. It's not a great movie. It has a couple of like genuinely scary parts in it, but it's very slow moving. Very, very slow moving. And The Fragile has Calista Flockhart in it, and she's like in this hospital in Spain, and something is like breaking all these children's bones. It's like a ghost or something. Like, basically, the kids' bones will just suddenly break for no reason. There's some really cool things about this movie, and like, you don't normally see kids getting fucked up, but kids get fucked up in this movie. But Calista Flockhart is just, ugh, so bad. So I can't even believe she's have a TV show.
I don't like her, so if she's in it, I generally avoid it.
Right. Well, I don't like her either, but I'll get on board with it if she could actually pull it off. But the acting is just so fucking bad. It's so bad. It is like sci-fi channel level bad. And I'm not talking about like good sci-fi channel Battlestar Galactica. I'm talking like Crocosaurus style acting. It's bad. Bad. Anyway, so back to Rec 2. This one opens up at the closing, with the closing image of the first one, where we're seeing Angela in the foreground, and she gets dragged away by the scary chick. Which, by the way, I didn't mention this because Summer was leaving. Do you know how they were able to achieve that character the way that character looked? It's kind of interesting.
No,
it's actually a real dude, and obviously the breasts, he had like prosthesis or whatever breasts. But he has, what's the word I'm looking for? A genetic disorder called Marfanism. Have you ever heard of that? Like, of no. Marfans? They say that Abraham Lincoln might have been a Marfan. But basically what it is that it, like, makes... Their Marfans are very, 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 like, emaciated, skinny. And they have their fingers and their hands and their arms and legs grow, like, oversized, like, lengthwise. They're, like, really long... really, really long, and they're it's like a kind of like a deformation. It's really uncommon, but it does exist. So like that guy like looks like that, not in the face, but like that's the reason they were able to have that like uncanny but unnatural, but you know what I mean, like it didn't feel like CGI, didn't feel like puppetry, was because it was like an actual person, not in a suit, but like his genuine body.
Cool.
I know, right?
That is really cool.
You can look, like, if you Google him, there's pictures of him, like, of the actual guy, and you can kind of see, like, that really is his body, that it wasn't manipulated digitally or any kind of puppetry. Like, that's, like, a dude.
Of course, you know, if they did that in America, you know, the ADA would be suing them, and somebody would be protesting the movie.
Yeah, well, I think the guy, yeah, totally, but, like, and the guy that was in it here is the guy that plays Abe Sapien, Doug Jones, that's his name. He was like he's in like all the Guillermo del Toro movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Rick 2, dragged off by the Marfan. All right. okay. So then after that, it cuts to, in a very like Aliens, like homaging style, to a bunch of military dudes. And they're in like some sort of transport vehicle, like a Hummer or something. And they've got cameras on their helmets. And I thought this was really smart because, like, how are you going to get another camera in there? You know what I mean? So to make it something that's, like, a tactical necessity, and why it also eliminates the why don't they just put down the camera and run problem that a lot of these movies have. I mean, it's not a hindrance to have this thing on your head. You forget it's there, right? And, in fact, it's actually beneficial because you can tap into other people and see their feeds.
Yeah, like when they get that really cool bathroom scene.
Oh my god, if we're getting into that, I love that scene. That's a good one. That scene's
awesome.
Okay, so they're like, you're kind of getting to know your characters here, and I mean, they're pretty interchangeable, not to be mean, but I mean, they're just like Army Guy A, B, C, and D. And the only way that you really can keep track of who is who is because their names show up in their camera feed, which I felt really helpful because I would never remember their names otherwise.
Chief, Lara, and I can't remember the other one.
Okay, there was Chief, Lara, like Mateos or something like that.
Something like that.
And then other guy. Yeah. I believe that was his name. Other guy. okay. They're being brought in because they're being told they need somebody to escort someone from the Ministry of Health, which is pretty ironic. The Ministry of Health, considering who he turns out to be. And into the building because he's going to be going into the quarantine area to do whatever a Minister of Health would do. And you also, we get to meet the husband/father of the daughter that turned zombie inside, who's trapped outside with a bag full of antibiotics.
Yeah.
Trying to get back in. And they kind of brush him off, even though he's freaking out, and enter the building. And right away, I love the first thing you see when they go in the building is that big blood puddle from where the fireman fell in the first movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and how fucked up is that? That is so exactly what you don't want to see when you walk into a building.
Totally.
I remember one time I was walking into a Target and some guy had fallen and hit his head on like those like stone garbage cans. There was blood everywhere. And I never have been like someone to get woozy, but something about seeing just like the smallest amount of blood, I was totally lightheaded. So the
blood doesn't bother me. Vomit does.
Ooh, vomit is bad. Vomit is bad times. Yeah. I think maybe people just kind of need to keep their stuff to themselves. That's just sort of my rule. Okay, so they see the blood. And now this is the first thing that this Ministry of Health guy does, other than just totally looking like a creepazoid to make him look very suspicious. Is he wants to right away go straight to the penthouse. Now, if he is just some Minister of Health and some like official from like basically the equivalent of the CDC, why would he immediately want to go to the penthouse?
Yeah.
What is in the penthouse that he knows about that leads him there, right? So right away I was like, oh no, I smell a rat. What's going on here?
Yeah, and the thing is in a tactical situation, because you have a tactical team going in, the first thing they would do is go room by room, clear bottom floor, next floor, and work their way up to the penthouse.
Right. 100%. You're absolutely right. So, like, you knew something shady was going on. So he goes, and also, and just as a viewer, I'm like, I keep waiting for, like, the tenants to pop out, but they managed to make it up to the penthouse, they see a couple bodies, and the guy's like, oh, here's the doctor, or, you know, like, he recognizes some of the bodies that the firemen had killed on the stairway on the way up, but otherwise, the place is a ghost town, which is, again, like, if they really were zombies, that would not happen, but it implies some sort of intelligence to our bad guys here. They're not, I mean, yeah, they scream and act a fool, but they're not stupid, because A, they're not running up to windows and getting shot, and B, they're not just, like, they're waiting, they're sort of, like, waiting, the trap is being set, they're, like, letting them get into the building before they attack.
Yeah.
And, I have a theory about this, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. But remind me that I said I have a theory about this. Okay, all right, so he wants to go directly upstairs, so they go up there, and break into the penthouse with a battering ram, and this is the part where they're like, you know, they kind of have to make sense of why things are being recorded. They are. He tells the guy, like, you know, we have to document everything, record everything. So that was a reason for the guy to, like, be looking at everything he needs to be looking at for us as the audience, which I thought it's nice to have a little throwaway line like that, because then you don't get into the whole, like, logic debates with people. Okay, so he starts looking and he sees the pictures on the walls, and he sees, like, the weird creepy crucifix, and again, he sees the reel-to-reel recording thing, and they start playing it, and it's like it's the same priest, and he's talking about how this order has come from the Vatican, the girl has to be stopped, and they know there's something going on here. They don't know what's going on. They think, you know, as far as they know, there's some sort of weird contagion. So obviously this is kind of off-putting to hear the word Vatican talk, which, you know, I don't blame them. And they find the attic entrance. Again, let me reiterate, you never go up in the attic. It's just never a good idea. But of course, you know, it wouldn't be a movie if they didn't open it, so they opened it. And this is the first time we get the picture-in-picture thing, where we're switching camera views, and it's kind of a smart way for the director to be able to enter cuts, is because now they pull in a little picture in picture, and then that picture widens into the screen. All of a sudden, there's, like, this really loud music coming from downstairs. So Martos, one of the army guys, breaks away, and he goes downstairs to investigate what the sound is. And he gets into the room, and he finds, like, a record player playing, and he turns it off, and he's kind of investigating, and he gets attacked, and he gets bit.
Yeah.
And this is the point where, like, I mentioned that I was like, wow, the things are moving a lot faster, that with your explanation makes more sense. Because the other army guys get down there, and he's kind of just standing there, and you see him, and he's totally changed. Like, 28 Days Later style, he's got, like, the creepy black eye, red black eyes, and he's super violent and trying to bite them. And they shove him into this room and close the door, and he's, like, attacking the door. But then the Minister of Health guy grabs, like, a knife and a rosary and seals him in there and, like, says some, like, Latin-y type of things. And at this point, you know, like, he definitely is not who he's presenting himself as. And the first time I saw this, I thought this was a nice little twist, because I did not see it coming. Like, I knew there was something going on with him, but I just thought he was going to be, like, the Paul Reiser's character. You know what I mean? Like, turn out, seems like he's cool, but then and he's going to fuck things up for people. But, so I did not see the religious thing coming. Again, maybe it's because I have that American perspective where I don't jump to religion. And so he's like, all right, we got to go. We're not safe here. We got to go back up to the penthouse, and I'll tell you everything. So he gets up there and he explains to them, you know, I'm not from the Minister of Health. I was sit here. The army is not in charge of this. Like, everything you think you know, you don't know. I'm here because I need to find this antidote. And they, like, they're screaming in his face because, like, one of their dudes has just been infected. And they tear open his thing, and you see he's a priest.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool reveal, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So then he explains to them basically that what exactly is going on. That there's this, it's like a virus, but it's actually demon possession. And why he's there is he's trying to get a sample that the priest had of the original girl, the Medeiros girl, because they can use her blood to create an antidote. And if this thing breaks out, like, and breaks wide, they need to be able to treat it in some way. The only way that they're going to be able to get out of the building is if he gives the order. And they check in with him periodically on his, like, walkie-talkie, and he has to give his name and say, and, like, basically authorize whether or not they leave, and he's not going to give it to them unless they help him find this this blood sample to do the antidote. So they start searching the apartment.
They're kind of attracted to this door because of the smell.
Right.
And so they open it, and it's just this long hallway. They think that that's where the girl's at, but it's just this long hallway. And they go down this hallway, and at the end of it are, like, charts up on the wall with photos. And right. And there are these photos of, like, the progression of the disease on children, but the tactical team thinks that they're experiments that are done on the children to make them look this way. And right. One of the guys is just, he's like, I'm not doing this, you're sick. You know, he's ready to just shoot the priest and get the hell out of there.
Right.
And I think that's when one of the infected drops from the ceiling and attacks the team.
Right. Oh, that part is so creepy too, because they're arguing. And he's like, the Ninos. Yeah. And all of a sudden, just this kid's face, like, totally like bat kid style. It's it, like he's like screaming and he's like pale and kind of like crusty looking and bloody,
yeah.
And he just starts attacking them. And so when they like fight back, he doesn't just like fall down on the floor. He crawls away on the ceiling.
Yeah,
and you know you're fucked at this point. When the kids are crawling on the ceiling, it's a bad day. It is a bad day.
And the tactical team finally gets the kid and they're trying to restrain him. And the priest ends up grabbing a shotgun from one of them and just walks over and shoots it right in the head. And then
that's such a great blood splatter, too.
Yeah.
Because they can hear the kid, like, running around in the ceiling. So they end up shooting up into the ceiling, and part of the ceiling falls down. And in that is this, like, rotting body of the priest who's, like, sealed himself in there. And, like, the kid was up in the ceiling. So they're like, okay, there must be something going on up in the ceiling. So... they send one of the guys up and we get his little camera, his picture-in-picture camera, and there's like a crawl space, the ventilation system, right? And they realize that in the ventilation system is like this little refrigerator, and he has to go down there because they're like, oh, that's where the samples must be. That must be where he's keeping the samples, because it's like, you know, obviously still refrigerated and it's been set aside and protected from these kids that are being sealed up there. So he crawls through the crawl space and he finds the vial that is like the important vial that has her blood in it. And he's crawling back out. And this to me is one of the best parts of the movie. Like one of the parts that just like made my heart skip a beat is he's looking down the crawl space and one of the kids comes out around the corner and starts chasing him. So he's like backing out of the crawl space as fast as he can as these kids are coming. And just in the nick of time, he's able to like close this like gate that separates between him and the kid. And that's when you realize there's not just one kid, there's like a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
And they're all banging to try to get out. Oh, oh my God. That part was fantastic. Fantastically creepy.
It was really cool.
Yep. So, okay, so he backs out, and they're like, yes, we've got the blood. And they're like, okay, call it in. Let's get the fuck out of here. And the priest's like, no. Dumbass priest. Had what he needed. But he's like, no. We need to test it. We need to make sure it's hers. Like, he refuses to leave until he tests it. And this is when you get, like, the really great, like, homage to The Thing. Did you totally get the Thing vibe?
That was cool.
So he takes the blood, and he pours it into this little dish. And he puts a cross in it, and it, like, starts bubbling, like boiling instantly, and catches on fire. And he's like, yes, we got it. Except for, I'm not really sure how this works, but it catches the blood in the vial on fire too. And then the army guy's like, ah, and he drops the vial because it's on fire. And he's like, no, we lost the sample. We can't leave until we get a sample.
Well, see, that's the, what I'm kind of thinking is it's like a, giant stream of consciousness between all of the infected.
Right.
So if she feels it, they all feel it, and everything associated with her feels it.
Huh. That's an interesting. You know what? That kind of makes sense.
Which would also explain why, when they come to the building, everybody's quiet, and you know, she's telling them, "Wait, you know."
Absolutely. I think you're totally right. Because, I mean, obviously she communicates through them, which we see later on in the movie. And, yeah, no, I think that, yeah, that seems like a really good explanation to me. But as they come out of the room, all the tenants start attacking. They're all the ones that have been MIA are suddenly there. We see, like, the Chinese lady. We see Mono, the fireman. They're, like, coming after them. And one of the guys accidentally gets separated because they end up backing up and getting somewhere safe. But Lara, or however you say his name, gets separated from them. And he gets into one of these apartment buildings. And the way the apartments are, there's like a door, and then there's these long ass fucking hallways. And apparently there's like two entrances to this place because he gets stuck in the center, and there's like the possessed coming at him from either side, and he backs into the bathroom and locks. He fights them off as much as he can, but he runs out of ammo, so he backs up into the bathroom and closes the door, and he's like freaking out because they're like banging on the door, and they start breaking through the door. You want to describe what happens next?
Oh, this is awesome. He's panicking,
right?
And you know, they keep telling him, calm down.
Tranquillo,
like,
tranquillo.
I'm out of ammo. He's like, I'm out of ammo. And they tell him, well, you still have your sidearm. And he turns around and he looks in the mirror and he's like, yeah, I do. And then he puts it in his mouth and just blows his brains out.
It's great, too. The way that the shot is set up is amazing, too. I think it's smart because you don't just see... I mean, you wouldn't be able to see anything because the camera's on his head. So he, like, looks at himself. So you get to see the distress and all the drama of what's happening to him on his face. But in the background, you can actually see the possessed breaking through the door.
Yeah.
So it's this really well-composed shot that, like, it just is so panic-inducing. And then, bam, he blows his brains out. Good stuff. I have to say, this movie, in terms of kills, Wreck 2 takes it all the way.
Yeah.
There's some really great kills in this movie. Okay, so, you know, it's a wrap for Lara. There's no coming back from that one. So we go back to our priest and the last two army guys. And the priest is like, wait a minute, I have an idea. We can get another sample. We have to find the girl. If we can find the original girl, Medeiros, then we can take a sample from her. And we can get out of here. So, okay. So, and then at the same time, he's like, oh, wait a minute. I'm still getting Lara's feed. The one that they trapped in the room with
Mortos
or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
So, I'm still getting his feed. And they show what he's seeing on the feed. And it's like these kids and another dude. And then the camera goes blank. And it's at this point that the movie kind of takes a little... kind of shocking turn. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Okay, you want to take a little bit of it from here? I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, the movie at this point kind of switches gears and becomes almost a whole other parallel movie.
Yeah, which I think is great.
You're watching these kids who are on a building on the other side, and all they're trying to do is they've got a bunch of fireworks, like a bunch of bottle rockets, but like bigger. And they're trying to make an inflatable doll fly.
Yeah, they got the blow-up doll.
They got this blow-up doll that has rockets attached to the back of it. And one of them's filming, and they're trying to launch this thing off the balcony when, you know, it goes off and, of course, deflates and melts. And
yeah, it just pops the thing.
Yeah, and it's about that time that the military basically shows up and kicks them off the roof.
Yep.
So they notice all the stuff going on with this building and decide to record what's happening.
Yep.
And as it turns out, the father with all the antibiotics happens to run into a fireman, and he tells him, hey, there's a drainage, you know, the fireman's telling him nobody can get in, nobody can get out. I've got guys in there. I got somebody who's injured. I've lost contact with them, and, you know, the father's telling the fireman, well, my daughter's in there, she's sick, I have her medicine, I have to give it to her. So they come up with a plan to sneak in through the drainage ditch, the drainage tunnel that we hear about but never see in the first one.
The second, because we see the dad. So the second little Easter egg is this thing that got mentioned in the first. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, so these kids overhear it, and they decide to follow him in. And
they're pretty ballsy little kids, man.
Yeah. So, they follow the dad and the fireman in, and the fireman finds him and tells him they have to leave and tries to get him out of there, and it turns out the military's already gone in behind him and welded the drainage hatch shut.
Oops.
So they're all stuck in there now.
Right. And they went from being, like, all ballsy with the gun to, like, shooting off the gun to, like, crying and wanting out real fast.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... I'm sorry, go ahead.
So they make their way upstairs to the father's apartment. And, you know, he's just like, where is everybody? And he's calling for his wife and his daughter, and he's walking around. And the wife comes out of, like, the kitchen and attacks him. And... one of the kids, they're trying to pull her off and doesn't work. One of the kids goes over and shoves one of the fireworks into her mouth and lights it off. And she's just flailing about with this rocket stuck in her mouth.
It's so awesome. That is like one of the best and most creative kills ever. I love it. Even the way that I don't know how the actor did it, but the way she just like flops like violently back and forth is fantastic. It's at this point that the fireman starts looking out the window. He's trying to, like, let people know that he's in there. I don't know what he's thinking. He's thinking he's going to get out or something. But the sniper, they start threatening him, tell him to get away from the window, and they don't. So the snipers start shooting. And I think that's such a great scene where they're all, like, crawling on their stomachs, trying to go down that really long hallway as the sniper's shooting at them repeatedly. I mean, yeah. I don't know if he was trying to kill them or not, but he gets the guy in the ear the first shot. And yeah, he comes close to them several times.
Yeah, I was going to say the first shot seemed kind of like...
a warning?
Yeah, more like a warning shot. But then it's almost like he decides that he's going to go after them. And after that, he's no longer doing warning shots. He's actually aiming. They just happen to be, you know, getting the hell out of there.
Yeah, as you do. So, okay. So, so they run outside. And this is where you see the mirror to when the earlier scene where the body drops. And instead of looking down at them, they're looking back up at the other soldiers, and they run and hide. Let's see here. And okay, so they go back into into one of the apartments, and some guy comes out and starts attacking. Or no. They hear they think they hear a little girl talking. They think they hear Jennifer, the daughter of the guy that they went into the building with, and she's trapped in a room asking for help, but it's the room with the knife in it with the rosary with Martos behind it. So they open the door, and of course, Martos attacks, and he's wrestling with the fireman, and this is the other, like, one of the other most brutal parts of this movie that I was just like, oh, damn, the first time I saw it. The little girl, they have a gun that's fallen, and the girl picks it up, and the fireman is holding Martos off of him. But they're, like, really close together, obviously wrestling. And he's like, shoot him. And she shoots him, but she doesn't shoot him. She accidentally shoots the fireman.
Yeah, that was like, oh.
She's just, like, freaking out as you would. I mean, like, that's just, like, you'd be gutted if you did something like that. But I mean, it's also kind of one of the most realistic moments of the movie. It's not like she's a sharpshooter.
Well, because, see, in my head, I'm thinking, you know, run up and put it in his mouth and fire. But I'm like, yeah, probably in that situation, I'd want to be as far away from that thing as possible.
Right.
I wouldn't want to get close to fire.
Right. Plus, and time is totally at a premium. So you're just like, oh my God, I'll get bang. Oops. Sorry, dude. So it's a wrap for the firemen and the kids are on their own. But not very long because the other military guys end up showing up and let's see here. They end up killing Martos, but he's bitten one of the kids. So they scoop up the kids, and they end up tying one of the kids up. But before they're able to question him or anything like that, in the background, we see the battery is dying on the main camera that we're watching, and we see this girl's shadow. And are like, oh crap, what now? Because that's usually how they end up introducing all of the different possessed. But it's Angela, and like in like Twist, she ends up walking down the hallway and she's holding her camera,
which is cool because at first you just see her silhouette and it looks like she's holding like an assault rifle or something. And then as she gets closer, you realize she's like hugging the camera for dear life.
But I totally did not see that coming. Like, I did not expect to see Angela again. So, like, part of me is like, yes, it's Angela, who I really liked in the first movie. But then at the same time, I know how that movie ended. So I'm not really that sure how it, you know what I mean? Like, she's obviously kind of like a suspicious character.
Oh, yeah. I had the same reaction, too. I was like, yes, she lived. Wait,
she lived? So at this point, like, she tells him, like, I saw her, saying that she, you know, that she saw the girl upstairs. And now looking back, obviously, that's kind of a suspicious thing to say, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't really catch it this time, or the first time I watched it. And so they end up taking the kid, and they tie him up. And they start questioning him. He's like speaking Latin, and the kid's talking all this shit. Like, look for her in your mom's cunt. You'll like it. Blah 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 blah. And eventually, though, like, the power of Christ compels him to tell him, you know, she's up above. She's high above. And the light blinds you. The light doesn't let you see her. So they're like, how did you see her? And they're like, they realize that she had seen her through the night vision, which I thought was such a really cool, like, another cool twist, like, worked.
Yeah, because when he says, you know, the angels were cast, those that were cast out of heaven were imprisoned in the darkness, so that's why we can't see her, because she's in the dark.
Oh, so cool. I just thought that was, like, and the thing is it wasn't something that took away from or was a stretch in any kind of way or rewrote anything in the first movie. Like, it all still totally worked. Because, you know, all it relied on was that they only ever saw her with the night vision. So I thought that was really, again, smart writing. Either they came up with it after the fact and that was smart, or they went into it with that intentionally, and it's just good writing. So they, of course, have to make their way back upstairs with the new plan of using the night vision. And it was at this point, so they go up into the penthouse again. And I hadn't noticed it before, but the priest, did you notice he had like a big gnarly scar on the side of his face?
Yes.
Okay. Remind me. I have a theory, but I'll come back to it at the end. Okay. So they start looking around. They can't see anybody there. It's the same deal as last time they were there. So they turn off the lights and start looking through the night vision. And it's through the night vision that they first see the door. Oh, the door. So, like, when you couldn't see this door with the hall light, it's the same, like, long, stinky hallway that had, like, the kid files in it, but it was just a dead end before. But now, all of a sudden, with the night vision, there's a door. So, they go through the door, and on the other side is, like, a creepy-ass laboratory room. Seriously, like, nothing good is happening in there. Like, there's got to be some vivisection or something creepy happening up in there.
Oh, totally. that room just gave me the creeps. And then when they turn the night vision on and you see that it's, like, those wells.
Yes.
Like, oh.
And, like, how is there a well in a penthouse?
Yeah.
The logistics of that well creep me the fuck out. So they're looking through that, and of course, like, either the stupidest or the bravest of the soldiers starts reaching into this well that he can't see because the lights are on, are out, and of course the girl comes, you know, like, jumping out, jump scared, and drags him back in. So they're, like, trying to save him, but they can't because he's been dragged into the, like, mystery hell well.
Well, because it's like he gets pulled in, and then don't they, like, freak out and turn the lights on?
Right.
So then it's just like, wait, where did he go? Because he's in the night vision, he's fighting and getting sucked and pulled into this well, but all they see is just this table with stuff on it.
Right. Oh, so this is kind of the final twist of the movie. This is, and I think this works. I think it's definitely, I did not necessarily, I knew there was something up, but I didn't know what it was going to be. Basically what ends up happening is Angela starts demanding that they, they go turn the lights back off, and obviously they can see the Medeiros girl, and the Medeiros girl has her hammer, her trusty little hammer. And so she, like, goes to town on the cameraman and kills him.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say I didn't like, did you notice the makeup was a little bit different in the second movie?
A little bit.
She looked a little bit like one of the crawlers from The Descent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas in the first one, I don't know what she looked like. She looked like almost like a zombie that had this bottom half of its face blown off in the first one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I didn't, I mean, that's just like such a tiny little like critique. It does not ruin it. I just, we get a better look at her forehead and I'm just like, she looks like a crawler. so she kills the cameraman. But fortunately Angela's there to save the day. And another one of the best kills of the movie. She sticks the shotgun in the girl's mouth and just blows the back of her head off. Which looks badass in night vision. Yes, it does. See what I mean? This movie has the best fucking kills. So, okay, you think like, okay, and the priest is like, no, I needed that sample. I needed it. And so you think it's pretty much a wrap. Like, she's like, okay, the girl's dead. You got to call it in. You got to let us out. And he's like, I can't. I cannot until we find an antidote. We're basically, we're dead. We have to stay in here. And they're going to have to come and do like a strike on the building. There's no escape at this point.
And she's just standing there with shock. She's like, I want out now.
And she goes all like, do you ever see True Romance?
Yes.
Okay. She goes all Alabama Whirly on his ass with that shotgun.
Yes.
She just starts kicking some priest's ass down on him. And she starts doing like the demon laugh. And you're like, ah, crap, she's the demon. And she...
Because the priest tells her, you know, it's my voice recognition. I give the order. You can't do this without me.
Right. And but then she says to him, and this is where my theory comes into play. She says to him, it would have been so perfect for you to have gotten me out of here. I would have loved it if you got me out of here. But I don't really need you. I mean, that's paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. And she ends up... Did she break his neck? Or no, she takes his head and bashes it into the ground and kills him. And then she uses his thing to call in and say, you know, we got what we needed. There's one survivor. It's a woman. I have to stay here because I've been bit. I'm going to let her out, but then I want you to call in a strike on the building.
Yeah.
Which sucks for the other two teenagers that weren't bit because they're trapped in the building.
Yeah. They locked him in before they went back to the penthouse.
Right. So, and so she's going to get out. And then they cut to the very, like, so then at that, you know, like, okay, the contagion is getting out. So already you're just like, fuck, that's fucked up. But like, how did she survive? And it cuts back to what happened right after the first movie ended, where, you see the girl in front of the camera. She's been dragged away and the Moderos girl holds her down, opens her mouth and like sends like a slug into her mouth, like a demon slug. Devil slug.
That is so creepy.
Yes, it really is. It's so like, ugh. I mean, slugs are bad times anyway. And like, you can see it like going down her throat.
Yeah.
And so that's how she did it. Okay. So now my theory.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a couple of things that happened. They were letting him be lured in and, okay. It's that plus the scar plus what she says to him at the end. Now, with the two movies that are coming out, one of which is kind of like a prequel, and the other one is an aftermath. And it's Genesis and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But in Spanish, so it looks better, but I can't say it. okay.
Neither can I.
So, like, perfect. So we're alone, or we're together in this bad, no Spanish speaking. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like the director, what he said basically, so like one of the guys is going to direct the first one and the other guy is going to direct the fourth one. So they're going to come out back to back. Like one's going to be in 2011, the other one's in 2012. It's the two directors of the first two. So it should still be good. And there's going to be all of these things. Like they said the first movie is going to be a decoder the prequel is going to be a decoder for Rec 1 and 2. So there's going to be a lot of things, a lot of Easter eggs that are all going to be explained that we didn't understand the first time, or maybe didn't even catch the first time, that are going to be like laid out in the first one, setting up the fourth one. So my thoughts are that priest is going to be in the first movie, the prequel.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because why else, I mean, why him specifically would it have been perfect for him to help her get out if he wasn't the one that put her in there?
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
And why does he have that scar?
Is that he was her original priest in Moderos.
Something like that, huh?
Yeah.
because he's got that. I think that scar is gonna matter because they really fucking showed that scar at the end, like it was like shining on his face.
Well, yeah, because you don't notice it, and then like halfway through the movie, all of a sudden, once they get back to the penthouse for the final time, it's like the scar is like the feature in the shots.
Yep. So I think we're gonna see his story, and he has something to do with the origin of whatever is happening with this like demon pathogen.
Yeah.
Okay, that was it. I know it was a lot of build up, but I didn't want to say it then. So I just wanted to remember to say it at the end. All right, so give me your review. What did you think of Wreck 2?
I like this movie. At first, it was a little jarring to have all this action, and then all of a sudden, it just cuts with no warning to some kids on a roof.
Right.
It was a little jarring, but once that got going and you saw where it went and how the stories meshed, it mm-hmm. was just... It was like it was almost like it grabbed you by the shirt collars and didn't let you go.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, I mean, I think I actually prefer the second one to the first one, which never happens.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself tells you how fucking kick-ass this movie was. But I think what it is it's almost like an extended, like the climax of the movie. It's like an extended version of that because chronologically it is, but also just. You go into it with the same momentum that you had coming off the first one.
Yeah.
And I know what you mean. When they switched over, it was totally jarring. And I was like, no, I want to see what happens next. You know, like, why are we worried about these stupid ass kids? I don't care about these kids. But ultimately, I mean, they needed to find some way to get some fresh meat in the building, right? Mm-hmm. And so it served that purpose. But it worked because, A, ultimately what happened with it was interesting, but also it fit into the whole, like, it was woven into the story, the overarching story, so well. Like, by including a character that doesn't feel shoehorned in. I mean, like, he is, for all intents and purposes, he is present. The husband is present in the first one. He's mentioned in the first one. It makes sense for him to be there. He's if, like, geographically he's there, even though you never see him. So that works. And he does have the motivation to be forcing his way into a quarantine situation. You know what I mean? And the kids are just stupid enough that they go along for it. I mean, like, they're dumb and it's not quite as well crafted with them, but like, it's a pretty clever way of creating more bodies. You know what I mean? So I can get behind that.
Well, and I think probably one of my favorite parts with the kids is actually in the beginning when they go in, and I can't remember which one of the boys it was, getting all mouthy with the fireman and like, you can't tell me what to do. I have no right to be here. And the fireman slaps him, and then he's just like,
and he's
crying. And it's just like, and the fireman's like, you're leaving now. He's like, okay.
I know, he totally gets bitch slapped. No, I mean, I'm really excited to see the next movie, but I'm also, I mean, like, I feel like they kind of, I mean, the first one was so great. The second one was so great. What are the odds we're going to get another really great one? I mean, I'm optimistic because they pulled it off twice, which already is really impressive. But God, how are they going to, two more movies? How are they going to do that?
Well, and the thing is like, each one of these movies, they tie in as a great story together. It finishes on a really great note, but they're also good standalone films.
Right.
There's just enough explained in Wreck 2 that you don't necessarily have to see Wreck 1.
True. But God, it's so much. I mean, I guess you could watch it by yourself. You're totally right. I mean, it's a simple enough story that, and there isn't like a ton of like mythology that you're missing necessarily. It could work, but it's so much richer for having seen the first one. Cause I mean, like, why would, you know, like, where are the tenants coming from? Like the whole textile mill stuff, where the gun, all of these little things that are given context by the first movie, which to me, I mean, it just, that's so awesome that there's so much of that worked into it. Like, you know, usually when you have a sequel, things are pretty, there's like one or two tie-ins and everything else is like, you know, fresh whole cloth, new things. But they're like, it's like every little piece that dropped in the first one gets picked up by the second, even so far as like a gun. It makes sense in the narrative that there would be a gun there. Because that's where the cop got bitten. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just think they did a really nice job with that. I'm clearly a fan.
Yeah, I highly recommend both of these.
Well, then let's go ahead and skip to our Netflix streaming pick. So part of my previous homework was to, I was going to go back and watch all of the like, I wanted to watch a lot of, like, old black and white horror, like the Universal Monsters, stuff like that, that I mean, I just have never seen, you know? It's not that I have any sort of, like, you know, new movie elitism. I just never seen them.
You tend to start with the movies that were around when you first came of age.
Right.
Like, for me, like, you know, it's an American Werewolf in London, to me, is the ultimate werewolf movie.
Right. Right. Oh, totally. I mean, and it makes sense that you're such a slasher fan, too, if you came up in that era of, like, where slashers were king.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, anyways, I've been watching older movies, and I feel like it's been a very rich experience for me, because there's a lot of stuff that you don't even know is, like, homages, or you don't, you know what I mean, like, different tropes that you see now that are commonplace, but these were the innovators. These were the people that kind of came up with these different tropes. So, like, it's cool to kind of go back and see some of that. But anyway, so my Netflix streaming pick this time is coming from that era. For those people who haven't seen it in years, or who have, like me, never seen it, I'm recommending The Wolfman from 1941. Okay, so I'm going to, as I do, I'm going to read the description from Netflix. All right, let's see here. After teasing his friends for believing in werewolves, Larry, played by Lon Chaney Jr., is bitten by a rabid wolf and faints. Wow, how butch is that?
is an actor.
What's that?
I said, isn't he an actor in this one too?
Who, Lon Chaney Jr.?
Well, the character Larry.
I don't get it. I'm confused.
He's just being dramatic by fainting.
Okay. So, horror superstars share the screen when Larry wakes up to find a gypsy, Bela Lugosi, who moonlights as a werewolf. Cursed with the werewolf's bite, Larry suffers a torturous full moon transformation and tries to escape the townsfolk who hunt him. Claude Rains, Evelyn Ankers, and Ralph Bellamy also grace this classic B movie. Okay. So, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the movie. Everybody kind of knows the story, but aside from, like, what I said, where a lot of these movie tropes come from these old-timey movies, the benefit of I don't know, like, they're in a way that movies are not today, these older movies, and this one in particular, is very transportative. Like, it feels like Hollywood, and it feels like old golden Hollywood, and it feels like a movie experience in a way that movies don't have that same kind of movie, typically don't have that same kind of movie magic. I mean, it's a campy, absolutely. Is it scary? Not so much, but it's like a really legitimately enjoyable watch. And a lot of times we suffer for our love of horror movies, whether the movie is bad or it makes you feel bad. It's good and you like it, but you feel kind of bad. You feel kind of like you need, like, a shower. This is one of those movies where you can kind of, like, indulge your love of horror and really come away from it, like, having had a good time. And it's kind of like when you finish, like a real book. Usually you're reading, like, Stephen King, and then you, like, pick up, like, a real, like, novel, and you read it, and you feel, like, better about yourself for having done it. You're like, yeah, I'm smart. This is sort of like the film equivalent of that. Like, you know, you've watched something that is, like, legitimate cinema. And not that I don't love trashy movies. Once in a while, you need, like, kind of, like, something with a little substance. So definitely check out The Wolfman, the original, whether it's for the first time or the first time in a long time.
Cool.
All right. So that's basically it for tonight. Unless there's anything you wanted to put out into the airwaves, Miss Sarah.
No, not off the top of my head.
On the spot. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. I think that I had a ton of fun talking to you today. Like, I was a little nervous. Thanks. You never know. You just never know, like, if you're going to, like, jibe with people. And I feel like you fit right in.
Well, you know, when I told my friends I was going to be doing this, all of them thought it was very funny that I would be on a feminist podcast, because I tend to be rather boorish in my behavior at times.
Oh, I don't know, man. We have thrown that feminist. I mean, like, I'm a feminist, and I'm proud to be a feminist. I'm not afraid to drop the F-bomb. But, man, I lost my feminist card on the show episode, like, 2.
Oh, you like zombie strippers too, huh?
Pretty much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
See you next time.
All right.
Bye. Hey, everybody. Due to certain circumstances, we had to record this part of the podcast separately, and this is going to be our feedback portion from our wonderful listeners.
Yeah, you know that's right.
So, I believe our first one is going to be a voicemail. Is that right, Rachel?
Yes, we've got some voicemails, and some of these seriously are, I mean, like, shame on us. They are so old. But you know what? That's our own fault. That's our own fault for being laggers and putting out a new episode. So,
this is our bad. Sorry, guys.
So this one is coming from us all the way back from 2010. You remember 2010? Really long time ago. From, to be exact, from October 31st, following the premiere of The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead.
Ooh. From our homie Flanagan over at Shitty Movie Night Podcast.
Nice.
Okay, so I'm going to play it for you. All right, brace yourself.
Now I lay me down to sleep, a spike bat at my feet. If the undead should rise before I wake, let the deadbolt hold, for God's sake. Hello, ladies. This is Flanagan from Shitty Movie Night. And The Walking Dead just finished on the East Coast 30 seconds ago. And sadly, I'm the only person I know who actually watched it live and have no one to talk to about it. So I'm calling your hotline. I just want to say that so far, this series is awesome. Probably some of the goriest effects I've seen in a movie, let alone a TV show, in the past 10 years. Some of the most emotional scenes in a zombie show. Granted, it's taking its time. It can, because it's a TV show. Sadly, now I've got to figure out how to go to sleep with all those visions of zombies crawling through my head. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. So that was Flanagan.
That was awesome.
I know.
That was his little intro. That was nice.
It was very poetical.
I know. Hey, by the time we actually respond to his voicemail, maybe the second season of Walking Dead will be out.
Pretty much, right? Because when is it supposed to come back? Like, in a few months, maybe? Like, September?
No.
Like that.
Well, here's the thing. Like, to make it even worse, there's, like, a lost episode of the Zombie Girls podcast that, like, that would have gone perfectly with. We actually recorded our very first commentary as we watched the show. And what I discovered was we're really good at watching the show, not so good at commenting on the show.
Not at the same time.
Like,
maybe we can put out just like an outtake episode and that can be part of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe there'll be like a very, very special episode of the Zombie Girls to like, I don't know if you would call it a prize, because it's not really a prize, but some sort of loyalty thing. So you can hear us at, like, you know, you can see what it would be like to actually watch a movie with us, because, like, we don't really have anything insightful. Well, not, I mean, we didn't have anything particularly insightful to say, just because it was the first time we'd seen it, but we definitely are really good at being the peanut gallery, so you can experience that. Okay, so awesome. That was Flanagan from Shitty Movie Night. Which, if you have not checked out that show, you should totally check it out. They're, like, masochists. They watch, like, the crappiest films. Like, oh, my God. They did, like, a back-to-back episode of, oh, God. What is the one with the creepy, the Baby Geniuses? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
You never heard of that movie, The Baby Geniuses?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's probably for the best. But needless to say, it's pretty shit-tastic. So they're definitely troopers for going there. Okay.
I love those type of movies.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you would like this one. That. I think Baby Geniuses or Super Geniuses might even be too bad for you.
Uh-oh, that's pretty bad.
That's really saying something.
Okay, you guys ready for our next voicemail?
Let's do it.
All right, this is from our most southernest listener, at least that I'm aware of, Doug.
Hey, zombie girls. This is Doug from Georgia. I just wanted to call and leave a message. First of all, congratulations on 20 episodes. Fabulous episodes. Enjoy listening to them. Whenever I need a pick-me-up, I go back to listen to y'all's review of Grace. It's the funniest thing ever recorded. I will never see the film. It's ghastly, but your review is hilarious. Let's see, on to some of the things you've been talking about. 30 Days of Night, it is a classic. I can't believe they went in the direction they did for the sequel. Crazy stuff. Let's see, you talked a little bit briefly about Creepy and Eerie. That was a Warren publication. He was sort of like the another magazine impresario, James Warren, the publisher. He was a magazine impresario somewhat like Hugh Hefner. I think he tried to go in that same vein, but he was a lot more successful with comics. He also did Vampirella, if you've heard of that character. And that should be an interesting one. Going to give a shout-out to Signs. I really like it. I mean, sure, it may have some illogical points if you look at it in one direction, but another direction is really cool. And I think it has one incredible image, the part with the alien on the rooftop. That's just like one of those indelible horror images of the last 10 years or so. Triffids, I like the original Triffids. I find it shocking to think that somebody would think it was, you know, a laugh riot because it's a serious and interesting science fiction film. One problem, of course, is the fact that all the prints right now are really terrible looking. It needs to be restored properly, and I think it might get a little more of the respect it deserves. And that's about it. Just keep it up. Enjoy listening to it. Hopefully there'll be another 20 in the very near future. Y'all need action figures and collectibles. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, peace out. Doug from Georgia.
So how awesome was that voicemail?
I loved it.
That was a nice one.
Okay, so...
And there will be 20 more to come.
That's right. Well, hopefully more than 20 more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, okay, first of all, things you talked about. Grace.
An interesting recording.
I actually went back and listened to that voice, that episode. Have you listened to it since we recorded it?
Well... That's the one where, like, we recorded for two movies, and I hadn't seen Grace, only you guys had, and we were still using the crappy mic, so you guys were sitting together on your love seat, and you kept touching each other's boobs.
There's a lot of boob talk. There's a lot of, like, mine and Summer's boobs, and there's a lot of, like, old Milky boob talk, and there's a lot of, like, us squealing in horror.
It always comes back to my boobs.
It really does.
Somehow it does.
So, like, and it's so weird now whenever I see that lady who was in the movie with the old Milky boobs, like, all I can see now is that breastfeeding scene. And she's in, like, everything. She was in an episode of X-Files and Fringe. I'm like, get out of my nerd stuff. I don't want to think about lactating ladies.
I know. People do that to you. Like, I was just watching the movie Kingpin again the other day,
uh-huh.
And I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. I personally love it. But his landlady does that really gross thing after they sleep together, and she, like, sticks her tongue out, you know? And that image is, like, forever in my mind, and I keep seeing her pop up in different roles, and she's,
you mean,
like, a totally
Insidious?
Normal person, and it creeps me out. Well, yeah, that, and I saw her in something else the other day, too, and now all I can think about is that. It's horrible.
You know, that's hilarious, because I totally thought about her in Something About Mary is what I always think of when I think of her.
Yeah.
I always think of, like, when they flash to her boobs and they're, like, all dried up. Oh, old, like, suntan leather boobs.
That's awful. Oh, the poor woman.
Okay, so what else did he talk?
Anything for comedy, apparently.
Yeah, no kidding. So, yeah, I love her, though. She doesn't get enough play,
I don't think. She's hilarious. Yeah, she's awesome.
Okay, so let's see. What else did you talk about? You talked about Grace. You talked about 30 Days a Night.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen that all the way through.
You've never seen 30 Days of Night?
Not all the way through.
I thought you watched the first one.
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. You
remember,
need to
I wasn't
that.
In that episode. That's the one where
you got bored, didn't you, or something? Like, you didn't like the middle part because it was too.
Yeah, like, I had a hard time watching it. I didn't like it.
Wow. I think, you know what, though? You were in your, like, haterade phase.
Yeah, maybe I should give it another chance because I have been liking movies that I did not like.
At some point, like when you take a vacation or something and you come over and we do a movie marathon, I'll throw that one in the mix.
Okay.
And see what you think of it.
Yeah, because it's awesome. It's really good.
Let's see. What else did you talk about? Action figures. I agree. Did you hear the end when he was saying we need action figures?
That would be so cool. I want
an action figure. Totally down to have action figures.
I think my ego would probably explode, but it would be awesome. Yeah. I mean, look at what these voicemails do to my head. Like, I can barely fit these headphones on already. Imagine if I had an action figure. So yeah, that's Doug, our homie from Georgia. So thanks, Doug, for the awesome feedback.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so should we keep this in the South?
Let's, yeah,
sure.
All right. So we've got two from Nudie and one from Gonzo. Which one do you want to go with?
Let's go, Nudie.
I knew it.
Summer just can't wait to hear Nudie's voice.
I know.
Okay, here we go. Here's the first one.
Hi, this is Sergeant Nudie. We've had a missing persons report filed on the Zombie Girls. If you know of the whereabouts of Summer, Rachel, and Ariel, please get back to us as soon as possible. Contact can also be made at facebook.com. Thank you.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
He is a nut.
Bob Nudie, that was wonderful.
Good news, he found us.
Love me some Nudie. He's hilarious. Okay, so here's his, like, his real voicemail.
Hey, this is Nudie. Yeah, I just called and left a message. I thought it was a funny one, but I don't know if it went through because it didn't leave me the option to save it. But anyway, I hope you girls come back on with the show pretty soon because I miss you. I miss hearing your voices. I mean, it's been a couple months now. Come on, girls. We need a show. Say hi to Summer and big hugs to all of you. Bye-bye.
So I think... Aww. Yeah. I know. Isn't he such a doll?
Yeah.
And he's like laying the guilt on, like, get put out a show.
I know. We're trying.
But you know what? Like, we've made some changes. It's going to happen sooner. And like right away, as soon as I made that announcement on Facebook, he was like the first one to be like, what does this mean? Is everybody leaving? Is someone going to be gone? I'm like, no. We're adding, not subtracting.
You would go through summer withdrawal if that ever happened.
I know. You're his podcast girlfriend. I would never separate you two. Come on.
No, we can't be separated.
Never. So, yes, we hear you, Nudie, loud and clear. More episodes are coming your way. All right, you guys ready for our last and filthiest voicemail? From Gonzo from Horphelia. You can always count on Gonzo to bring the, like, to bring the sexy.
I love the sexy.
Hello, zombie girl. This is Horphelia Gonzalez, Gonzo, whatever y'all want to call me. Just calling in about Rec 1, Rec 2. One of the two of the best zombie / freaking possession movies I've ever seen. Some of the best freaking... That bottle rocket scene made me cream in my panties. So keep up the great work. Ready for y'all to come on. Got the magic blue pills for us guys over here. So, you know, hugs and kisses and all your pink parts. Gonzo out.
I hear crickets and nervous laughter from Ariel.
Oh my God. Well, thank you, Gonzo. I can't wait for my special blue pill.
Way to go, Summer.
And I always love it when a movie makes a man cream in their panties. That's the end.
So, okay, yeah, Wreck 2, totally agree. Those are great fucking movies.
Yeah, great, great movies.
And people... the bottle rocket is totally the highlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great scene.
Yep. So, if you want some more of that hot Gonzo action, check out the Horphelia podcast because you'll get all the Gonzo you need.
Oh yeah.
All right, so that's it for our audio feedback. Thanks to everybody that called in. But we also love a good letter. Unfortunately, we got a lot of good letters this time.
Yes, we do. Okay. Greetings. I recently discovered your gem of a podcast and must say that I absolutely enjoy it. I have gone and subscribed to it off iTunes and have also downloaded all the previous episodes and have almost finished listening to them all. Your podcast is simply awesome and is something I now look forward to. Please keep doing an outstanding job, and I'll try and contribute feedback and opinions whenever I get the chance. Sincerely yours, Joe. I like that.
Yeah.
That was a really funny one.
So, ready for the next one? This one comes from Eric. Let's see here. Just finished listening to all 18 episodes of The Zombie Girls. You know what, Rachel? For a zombie girl, you have the most infectious, see what I did there, laugh ever. And stop making fun of your voice. I love it. Looking forward to episode 19, your zombie fan, Eric. Wow. That's great. Hardy.
Ridiculous. I'm glad finally somebody else other than a friend of yours is saying your voice is awesome. Because
I know you have
he's just trying to get in my cyber panties. Don't lie.
Thank God.
Just kidding.
Ridiculous.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Eric. You're very sweet. All right. Go for it, Ariel.
Okay. Hello, Zombie Girls. My name is Raven J. I do an internet show called Retro, Retro, Retro. I try to listen to other shows out there, and I came across The Zombie Girls. Pretty awesome from what I've listened to so far. Currently at the tail end of the Heather's Jennifer's Body episode. So, yeah, just saying hello, and I look forward to listening to the rest of your episodes. Take care, Raven.
Awesome. Heather's
a Jennifer's. I love the name.
I know. It's a good one, right? It's very
yeah.
Gothy.
Yeah. Raven J.
Raven J. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Heather's Jennifer's Body. That was a good podcast. That was with, I think that was the cursed one, though, because I think that's the one that we also did. Summer, you're going to remember this. The werewolf movie, the period one.
Oh, Ginger Snap.
Yes, you remember how many times we recorded that fucking episode?
Yes, I do.
I missed that one.
Oh, man. I'm I don't know how you missed it. It was like the buckshot of episodes, because we did it so many times that, like, there's no way you were able to miss that. It was like
we lost it the whole thing, remember?
Yeah, like 2 hours into a recording. Twice, like we were in the end and we lost, and like I was doing this back in my PC days before I got all appled out, and the shit fucking crashed on me twice. Oh, sucked.
Oh. Also a ringing endorsement for whatever computer you had.
Well, it was like an old, like, I don't know, Commodore 2. I mean, it was like some old shitty one that I had, like, you know, gotten from an old job.
Working on a Commodore
2. I'm just kidding. It was just like an old shitty little thing that I got from work. Anyways, so awesome. It's great to hear from Raven. Let's see here.
Raven.
We're down to our last couple here. Oh, this is a good one. This is actually one from one of the ladies that's going to be joining the show. So, like, ooh, breaking news. You're hearing it here first, unless you're on Facebook, and then you already know. This one's from Explody Joe, who's hopefully going to join us on our next episode. So she's going to be bringing, like, the UK sexy. I'm very excited. Because she's a smart cookie, like, super
horrifying. I love her voice.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll get over our crushes and, like, actually be able to interact with her next time. Okay, so this one's from like I said, Explody Joe. Hi, ladies. Great to have another Zom Girls episode. Looking forward to more. Do you gals have anything planned for your 2-year anniversary? Well, since that was in March, looks like we let that one just slip on by. But wow, we've got 2 years.
I know.
Oh my God.
20 episodes in 2 years.
Number 3 or something.
I know. We'll have to, like, step up our game this coming year. And do something special for our third anniversary. So, okay, Rachel, I'm glad you like Frankenstein. I recently saw The Wolfman and I really enjoyed it, probably more than I liked Frankenstein. So I can't wait to hear what you think. As for recommendations for more older movies, be sure to check out The Bride of Frankenstein and, of course, Dracula. I'm sure there's a Spanish version from 1931, which is actually superior, but I'm yet to track it down. Also, I highly recommend The Haunting from 1963. Fuck that remake. I've only seen the remake.
It is right there. The Haunting is awesome.
Yeah.
And the remake sucks.
That's the only one I've seen. So, like, that's why I think I've just been kind of like, meh. Because the remake was so like, shitty. But
yeah, we'll have to watch the original.
Okay. All right. I consider myself schooled. Okay. although, I cannot wait till we record our next episode, because you and I are going to have a conversation about Aliens versus Predator.
Really?
Alien versus Predator Part 2.
What's that?
I've seen Alien versus Predator Part 2.
Me too. So you can join in the conversation.
It's the only one I've seen.
But I'll save my call. I'm just joking, Ariel. It's not. I'm not gonna be like all in your face. I'm just giving you a hard time. Okay. Speaking of remakes, just saw the 2010 version of I Spit on Your Grave. I heard about it, but it kind of came and went, and I was totally not on my radar. While I'm not a huge fan of the original, I actually quite like the new one. Knowing exactly where the story was going to go, you were able to suspend disbelief and just enjoy the elaborate ways in which Jennifer Hills gets her revenge. One major flaw, though, which was also prevalent in the remake of Last House on the Left, is that one of the rapists is really hot. I'm looking at you, 2009 Krug. Shame on you, explodey. Oh, I love her.
That's kind of bad.
I'm guessing that must be Garrett Dillahunt in the... because he is pretty dreamy. But I don't know. Anyway, I'm not against remakes as a rule, but I'm pretty apathetic towards them. While they may be glossier and have sometimes better acting and gore effects, they lack the charm of their predecessors and are less mean-spirited. Maybe audiences think this is a good thing. What do you think? Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the show as always. Bloody Joe. So, I don't know. What do you think? Have either of you guys seen the remakes of Last House on the Left or I Spit on Your Grave?
I've never seen the originals or the remakes of either of those movies.
See, and I've only seen the OGs, both of them. although, you know what? On this episode that this is going to be a part of, Sarah was kind of singing the praises of the remake of I Spit on Your Grave. She really liked it. She said there's some really great creative kills, which... can't go wrong there. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's really interesting that that she's taking issue with the fact that they're less mean-spirited. Because usually, I mean, when you think of older horror movies, I would say that they're typically the less mean-spirited ones. Like, I think of, like, contemporary horror as being just sort of generally very mean-spirited. And sometimes I can get a little, like, little, I don't know. Kind of like exhausting a little bit. That's one of my critiques of a lot of horror movies today. So it's an interesting take that like the originals were so mean spirited that even to today's, you know, current horror film climate, they couldn't really compare.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the new one and to know like maybe specific scenes or something that she's referencing.
The one thing I know about the remake of I Spit on Your Grave is at some point she like. Like shoves a shotgun up some guy's ass and like you see the bullet go through his entire body and out the top of his head, which is kind of awesome.
Wow.
So that's pretty fucking creative. I don't think we've seen that before, like shotgun impalement.
That is very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one.
Okay, so your turn, Ariel. Oh, this is from our boy Doug.
Okay. I've been worried ever since I saw the announcement that you are looking for more zombie brains on the show, but in all reality, I think I understand and I shouldn't be worried. It's obvious that it's hard to corral all the current girls together into one room, much less keep a regular podcast going. So I'm sure you're hoping to find a few other folks who can get together more often for fun and mayhem, and thus you can produce shows more regularly. And hopefully the current zombie girls can still show up from time to time. Aka Doug.
Well, I know we've said it already, but just to reiterate, like, yeah, absolutely, the show's going to be going through some changes in the next few episodes, but they're going to be like better. Like, it's going to make the show better, not like take it away. What it means is it's just you're going to get more of it. It's going to happen more like more regularly. You'll get to hear some new voices, but none of the other girls, unless you guys are planning on leaving. As far as I know, nobody's going anywhere, right?
No, none of the original zombie girls are going anywhere. We're staying here.
Yep. So we're all good. I know where you live, girl. I will show up with a microphone. Okay. This one's from Rod in the UK. See, so we're so international. We got two UK messages this time. Taking the world by storm. Not really, but you know what I mean. I've only just started listening to your podcasts, but I've enjoyed them very much. None of my friends are into horror, so it's nice to hear other opinions on the films I love. You seem to have the same taste as I, have agreed with all you have said about 30 Days of Night, Descent, and various exorcism films. I have only listened to 3 podcasts so far. Well, I'm sure we'll disappoint you soon. Don't worry. I'm glad I was not the only person who thought The Descent 2 was terrible. Couldn't even make it through 30 Days of Night 2. God, they were both so bad. So bad.
No.
And one, they're terrible. Like, shame on them. Like, how do you, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to reiterate myself, so I'm going to move on. Okay. In one podcast, you mentioned The Zombie Diaries. Have you ever reviewed it? Yes. The answer to that is actually yes, we have reviewed it. I'll tell you which one it was. Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay. Episode 10. That's right. Yep. That's right. Episode 10. So 10 episodes ago. So yes, we did review that. And spoiler alert, I think we're about to agree with you again. I thought it was crap, but I would find it interesting to see what other people thought. I really wanted to like it as it's set in rural England where I live. Anyway, keep up the good work, Rod from the UK. So yeah.
Thank you in Zombie Diaries.
Okay. Last letter. Ariel.
Okay, and this is from Rod again. Just listened to episode 10, so I know you already have reviewed Zombie Diaries, lol. I have seen the glowing reviews of Zombie Diaries, and I'm pretty sure that the creators, the people involved, at least in the making of the film, have been going around writing fake reviews to make this film sound better than it is and trick more people into buying it.
Word. Conspiracy.
So many of the reviews on Amazon are by people who created an account only to review that film and have not written about any other. This makes me suspicious that someone would go out there just to write about Zombie Diaries and no other films, especially the way they speak of ZD being the best horror film of the decade and an instant classic, etc. Even if some bizarre reason some people do like this film, I still can't imagine anyone loving it that much. Glad to hear your fave zombie film is Night of the Living Dead. It was the first zombie film I ever saw and still my fave. Anyway, sorry to babble on again. Rod from England.
Oh. Well, first of all, you're not babbling on. I love our voice. Seriously, like, I can't say this enough. I love all the feedback that we get.
Yeah, it's great to hear other people's opinions. And sometimes they point out stuff that we haven't even thought of before. So that's always fun.
Yeah, like how awesome we are.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that is my favorite song film, and I love it.
Yep, good stuff.
Like, you know, once a year or something. So.
Awesome. So that's basically it for our listener feedback portion of the episode, which is a pretty hefty 20 minutes worth. So that's we got some love.
Yeah,
this
I'm glad
time.
I got to join in at least for part of the episode. So
yeah, definitely.
Well, everybody, I really gotta go pee.
So
we're calling it a night unless everybody wants to hear me urinate, and probably only Nudie does. Joking. So
yeah, we're gonna have to hook up a PayPal account or something if you're gonna be offering that service.
Yeah,
I know, right? You're gonna make some money off of that. So thank you once again, everybody, for listening and writing in, and send us more voicemails. Love the voicemails.
All right, bye everybody. Thank you. All right, go pee.
Got
like
a little bit.
3 hours sleep in 3 days.
Okay, have fun, guys.
Bullshit. Seriously, like, and then I read this article that if you get really tired, your brain can be asleep without you even realizing it. And I'm certain that was happening to me.
Oh, no, did you have micro naps? Like,
I totally was having the Nightmare on Elm Street remake nightmare micro naps.
Did you hear part two's coming out?
They are not making a part two. Oh, don't scare me, Gringa. Okay,
hey, at least you're not as bad as me.
I did security for a military base.
Uh-huh.
I sleep with a loaded shotgun in my hand, standing straight up, and the only thing that made me realize I was awake, that I had fallen asleep, was that a car drove by me, and I kept wondering how come there was a fish driving a car.
Scary, with a loaded shotgun.
But at the same time, though, I know where we're going when the zombie apocalypse
exactly.
comes. She can even kill in her sleep. I like that. Believe it
the
or not.
Star Wars party, huh?
Yes. Yes, I'm throwing a birthday party and for one of my fellow nerds. So, of course, it's going to be Star Wars.
I'm thinking about what I'm dressing up as. I don't know.
Well, I want to...
Me and Jamil were talking about it.
You should wear a gold bikini.
That's what he said.
Oh, shit. Yeah, because, you know, Rachie Dalla is going to be in the house.
Job in the
Stop Stop it! Oh my god, did you hear her?
Yes.
Stop it! She is a fool. You are beautiful, dumbass. Get the fuck out of here. I would be fucking juiced, and I would take hella pictures, and I would put them all over the internet. That's what I would do. Did you lock that? Because, you know, I don't want no, like, scary. I don't want no hobos cruising in my place. How sexy is this mic, though?
I do. I love it.
I love it. I want to get this mic pregnant. It's so sexy. All right, I love you. Go serve up them Big Macs. Out.